We'll call the meeting to order. This is the Virginia Salvage Management Advisory Committee meeting. We'd like to welcome everyone. We're going to turn this over to Mr. Button and go through the agenda that he has prepared.
Thank you. So at the last commission meeting, the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee was asked to discuss a possible extension of the area scheduled to close and the public oyster fishery. I'd like to take care of that portion of the agenda first and then go into the discussion of the replenishment plan and the discussion of the rotation harvest area and seed planting and the Potomac tributaries can be part of that replenishment plan there. But first, I'd like to get SMAC's input on that possible extension. At the last commission meeting, the area scheduled to close January 31st were extended by 7 working days, so they'll be closing February 9th. And those were areas, those were the areas in the, predominantly in the upper Rappahannock area, 6 and 7, as well as a couple other areas that were scheduled to close there in January. But the big push was for that, and the commission did extend those. We deferred any action. There was a couple requests from mainly the Pocomoke Sound dredge areas at that time to extend the season in the dredge areas. I've had a couple requests, both for and against extending Patentong areas. The Deep Rock area would be scheduled to close there in February. The other areas that close in February would be the James River areas. And that's really it. And that one little piece of Polt's Bar that was opened, which is only going to be open for a month there. But those would be the areas that we'd be discussing. And sort of the concern is similar to the areas that were extended there in January in terms of, you know, we plan the season for a certain number of harvest days. Sort of weather is generally taken into account, particularly the Bay areas, those Patentong areas, that's a 3-month season. The Pocomoke and Tangier, that's a 3-month season. And sort of given that you're going to miss some days, and also as we discussed in the previous commission meeting, it's not really evenly distributed how many days are missed by individuals. So, for example, in the Eastern Shore area there, Saxis did get hit pretty hard by ice. They lost probably more time than just about any area there.
The same working days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you know, Tangier lost close to, you know, probably 2 weeks there. But, you know, given February is just here there, it's sort of hard to say what it'll bring. And if February is, you know, February and there's no major ice, you might miss a couple days here. But that's sort of why the season is as long as it is, 3 months, so you can make up for it. And also those areas are different than Area 6 and 7, the Rappahannock. They were still catching their limit there when it was closed before 10, so it was still holding up pretty well. And already there in the areas, particularly in the Tangier and Pocomoke Sound, the boats are already staying out, you know, till, you know, afternoon 1, and it's just now February. So I think it might not be wise to extend that season any longer than it is, given that it's already the length that it is there. And in regards to the James River, which is the other area scheduled to close in February, I haven't gotten any specific requests to extend that area. I have gotten some concern that it's been open for as long as it has, and I think that it might be prudent of us to, given the length of the season there, to go ahead and let the areas that are closing, scheduled to close in February, stand as they are. And just sort of as an example of what happens before and after, which is sort of the concern that we have on the replenishment department, is you really do lose a significant number of spat when those areas are open, as well as you know, the small oysters get down, and that's sort of you're catching them today, and you're not necessarily, you know, having anything for the future there. And particularly when you're doing that last grind, that last week, that's when you're really getting into the substrate where a lot of little oysters start looking a little bigger than they are and might end up having to start leaving with the market oysters there. So there's that tendency there that last week that it might be better to quit while you're ahead, you know, given the season has been good so far, to not really grind out that last week especially considering a lot of the people who lost areas there on the Eastern Shore, and some of the Tangier men even have come over and worked in those areas there in the Rappahannock and the York River that have been holding up longer. So I think that the staff recommendation would probably be not... Is that Dan there?
That's me.
We're talking about the extension possible of the area scheduled to close there at the end of February, so Tangier and Pocomoke dredge areas there. And so that would sort of be a staff's recommendation. It would probably be not to extend the seasons there, but I'd like to hear what the advisory committee's opinion is on that, and I'd be willing to present what you guys here have to say about that. And this is sort of another example there that I pulled up there of really what you're losing when you do that harvest. So you're losing almost half the colch that's underneath those harvest areas. And as you know, we're sort of, we'll get into that in the replenishment plan, but when we get down to that, then that adds to a list that's already too long of areas that need replenishment. So if we can quit while we're above that, you know, 5 liters per square meter threshold or higher in some areas, then we're not adding to a list that's already too long. And it's pretty consistent that, you know, close to half of the shell and oysters that's there on the bottom is lost sort of in most areas, the way that we have the seasons laid out. So any additional effort that's put onto those areas just makes that already too long list longer. And that's sort of why we'd want to be cautious about sort of extending the seasons at this point. You know, it is February and it's still early, just the first, so there's a whole other month to make up for that lost time. And I'd kind of like to take that as a separate before we roll into any
okay.
of the other replenishment plans.
All right, thank you, Mr. Button. Questions or discussion from the committee?
Andrew, on 9 and 10, is there any way possible you could open that up for 2 weeks, 5 days on each? Boys at home have lost 15 working days. That's rough.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marylanders are getting them anyway. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you can do it. Does the commission have to decide on that or
That would be a commission action there, and we can potentially address 9 and 10 here in the replenishment plan, but I don't think that it would fly and be I don't think that would work for commission-wise, and staff would probably recommend against sort of adding a new area that wasn't part of the plan, just particularly to those areas, 9 and 10 there. So, I would make that ask of the commission to open up those areas for 5 days. But we might be able to address some of that in the replenishment plan, sort of a plan for 9 and 10 there will be part of the replenishment plan. But I don't think opening up it for 5 days to make up for what Saxis Island there lost would necessarily be prudent at this point.
Well, I got another question. Do you think it will be opened up next year?
That is sort of dependent on if we can put something back there, and if we can, you know, I'm hesitant to recommend opening any areas that haven't gotten some replenishment activity. So if we haven't planted any shells, you know, of a substantial amount, it would be hard to justify opening up again, given that sort of the spat sets have been low in that area, and sort of the rest of the Pocomoke Sound, since we have opened it up, it's not, the cause isn't exactly clear that it's 9 and 10 being opened up, but I would sort of say, generally, any area that isn't replenished, that isn't down below that sort of colch level like 9 and 10 are, we wouldn't recommend opening up until we've sort of brought them back up a little bit. But if we can replenish them this year, potentially we could open them up in the fall if we put something back.
Well, here's the problem. You're never going to get it back if law enforcement don't start doing their job. And you got marauders going in there. The guy called me, Dan. Dan's right on there. Seen two boats come in there yesterday when they're limited at 11 o'clock out of Merlin. You couldn't catch your limit in Merlin if somebody had a gun to you here. And, you know, it's irritating. When they're there taking oysters that we can work on, I mean, it's hard.
I think.
And law enforcement are not doing their job. I called Brandon in December. He said he'd have a boat up there January 1st because they were dealing with rockfish. There is no vote in the Sykes' Harbor, but I can guarantee you one thing. There's about three Marylanders out there in Virginia stealing Sykes' oysters. Mm-hmm. The last time we shot them, we looked terrible. It cost the boys a lot of money. I don't want it to have to come down that again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the replenishment plan there, it definitely should address some of those concerns there that we can take care of from our department. I mean, law enforcement issues.
Well, I'll let you go ahead on that.
I've heard something about that.
Hold off on that. Yep.
Go ahead.
on the replenishment problem.
Okay, there. You're good now.
Yeah. All right. As far as the, or not the replenishment, the expansion part of it for this sign, saying your boat sign. I think the consensus most of us feel that if we don't lose any more substantial amount of talent, with the locked in talent, I don't mean go through, 2 or 3 days a week. I mean, get locked in with all your stuff. As long as we don't lose any more substantial amount of talent, most of us feel that the extension is not needed. It looks like it's running its course. I would like the option to, I don't know if that needs to be made to a motion or how this goes, but at least just keep it open until the commission meets. And, Andrew, I'll be touching base, and Don can be touching base with you just in case, if we do lose 2 more weeks, maybe something could be done, but if not, I think most everybody feels that it's, it'll be long enough.
No, I think that commission meeting's there the 27th, I believe, so it's close to the end of February there, and they could definitely address any issue that came up with that recommendation, that not to extend it at this point. But if there is sort of an ice up or something like that, that we could address it there at that point. Like you said, we'll keep an eye on the weather here for sure. But I think that there's time to act there if needed there at that next commission meeting.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
I think from a waterman's perspective, and I think Ernie will agree. Probably by the end of next week, Rappahannock area 6 and 7. I think it's probably best to leave it alone, don't you, Ernie? Yeah, it's done very good, but you can see it's starting to fall off some now. Everybody's kind of scattered out a lot, But I think it's best for. I think we got the biggest part of it, It's been exceptional, We had a very good year, but I think everybody has. Dan, everybody. So, appreciate everything that the Oyster Replenishment Division has done. Andrew, Jim, y'all done a great job up there in Area 7, I tell you. I mean, it's been unbelievable. So, if we can keep Mother Nature on that side, I think we got something going here. Mm-hmm.
Anyone? I have something.
What was the extension for the York River?
The York River and 6 and 7, all the areas that were scheduled to close there in January got extended by 7 days, so till a week from tomorrow to the 9th. Okay. So 6, 7, York River Area 1 there, the area there that was open to Wacomico.
That covered the time that they lost due to the ice.
Mm-hmm. So they got, the York was less iced in than a lot of the other systems there, but they got an extension sort of collectively. Because you might recall that when we planned the season there back in August, there was some considerable thought by all of us to put into keep those areas consistently open to sort of keep people spread out. So that's sort of why, hesitant to extend just one area at any one time so everyone doesn't pile into that area.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like opening day there on the Pro-Tome there, our drumming ground there in the Rappahannock. You don't want 250 boats piling in there for that week. So.
And just one other comment, too. splitting the fleet up, Andrew, that was the best thing we ever done for oyster dredging, I can tell you that. I mean, it was just that meant the biggest difference in how long that those particular areas have lasted, I know, especially Area 1. I mean, we would have got 12 or 14 days, maybe, Ernie, getting your limit fairly early. And have my limit every day, you know, by 10, 11 o'clock for the whole month, which you never got it. If it had been double the amount of boats there, I can tell you that. Yeah.
Have you ever thought about what's going to happen to the James River when all these boats leave the Rappahannock, New York, what it's going to do to that the last couple of weeks?
That is a concern. That's sort of a little bit of a concern. Well, I mean, it's only at this point with the extension that might have alleviated part of that. February in the James, when that's the only area open there. My preference would have been to have had more areas open there concurrently later in the season to sort of keep more areas comparable there, but that was sort of a little bit of a compromise there with the James. We're going to take a look at it again this spring and see what particularly those areas that have been open there just for February when all the boats are there, pile it in and see what it does, and it might be something that if it's significantly different from the other areas that didn't have that pile up, that might be something we'll definitely be addressing it in the upcoming season. It's something to keep in mind that, you know, as we look towards the future there, that if you can maybe look at potentially trimming a little in October, maybe 2 weeks, and then adding 2 weeks off in February and sort of keeping more areas staggered opening still, but sort of shorten it a little bit in the winter months, that might be an option we can look at. But it is a concern when there's any area open, just one area, and having all the boats pile in there.
Tommy.
I have a request on behalf of 9 boats that we have, one of whom's here, that to consider a 2-week extension for the Deep Rock Pat and Tong area. We had about 25 boats total working in there last year, and it sounds like it's been 4 to 6 this year. And they are boats that would end up in James River if they don't have anywhere else to work, and give it the lower harvest pressure in Deep Rock. Yeah. Like that to be considered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Button, what would be your opinion on that?
I guess in terms of losing time there, is my understanding a lot of those boats were up in the upper Rappahannock dredging. So, I mean, sort of the try to keep everything as equal as you can. I realize that they would go to the James there, but, Deep Rock, it's one of the areas that we don't have to, it can get worked down with patent tongs. It won't happen as quickly as it does with a scrape or a dredge, but I don't think there was necessarily as much hardship for those 20 boats that are going to show up out there, because they were perfectly happy working up there in the upper areas of the Rappahannock.
We did have 5 boats at Windmill Point that tried to work it, but got iced in there and went back to Area 7. So there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it hasn't gotten much pressure at all. What, three boats, Ernie? Three boats the whole season, pretty much. Shannon Green just went there about a week ago. All of them stayed in the Rappahannock because that's been so good. So there wasn't any reason to go there. So it hasn't had much pressure at all. I mean, nothing like it would normally have gotten. And I don't think it'll be. I don't think it would be 20 boats on. Yeah.
I don't. I mean, that was total last.
Total, yeah, right.
If it can't stand the pressure for 2 weeks of that many boats, and it was going to be open for the fleet for 3 months, I mean that.
I think 2 weeks would help it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might be one of those areas that you could potentially open up in October for a patent tong season there in October. I know we tried to make that push this year for that. But, I think, if you open up Deep Rock just for a month in October, potentially, as opposed to changing the season around now, it's sort of one of those, it's hard to sort of adjust the seasons mid-season like this, and I'm always hesitant to do any of that, but I do understand that, it wasn't worked there, but, that might be an area that could support early effort in the patent tong fishery there in October, as opposed to one of the other areas in the Rappahannock, like we tried opening up there earlier. So that might be an option.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Now, on that, I think one thing we got to consider, everybody here that worked Area 1 this year knows what the meat quality of those oysters were, and Deep Rock was even worse the first 2 or 3 we got. So you know, you got to keep that in mind too. I would be in favor of looking at a later area there as opposed to the higher salinity and deeper water. It's going to be a poor quality oyster in October. We all know that.
Well, that might be something to look at, is sort of extending it sort of at a plan point as opposed to sort of 2 weeks now. I mean, it's you know, I don't have a you can make that as a recommendation if you want to make that as a motion there, but I would staff recommendation would be to leave everything in February sort of as planned there. I think it potentially would be, you know, a benefit to the folks that did have the patentong rigs there, but they've already benefited at this point from a season extension there too. So it's kind of a balance there. But I'd be happy if you guys want to make that as a motion from SMAC. I wouldn't really come down strongly against it one way or another, but I sort of still recommend that the February season sort of end where they are there in February.
Before we get into motions, I'd like to give the audience a chance to make comments if they would like to. Is anybody in the audience that would like to comment on this subject? Please, would you come forward, please, and state your name?
My name is Daniel West. I patent on oysters and drug oysters. You were saying nobody would be losing nothing. I mean, you gave us 7 days to dredge in February, but we're still losing 7 days that we put a patent on in February. You know what I'm saying? But we lost 7 days in January. What 2 weeks really, but they just gave us 7 days to work extra. So you don't think adding more to the patent home season or the same thing to make it be the same amount of days that we would have been getting anyway?
Any questions for Mr. West?
Daniel, what you saw, you worked there as much as anybody last year. Do you see any reason that the area would not take that pressure?
No, it's a good oyster down there, and it's not as fat and straight. And like I say, even with three or four boats working it all winter.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be worked really.
Mm-hmm.
Longer.
Mm-hmm.
Boats.
How many boats did you anticipate working over there to start with?
Last year, I don't think it was 8 or 10 boats. They worked it the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
10, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean from the planning standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 40. Did you have any anticipation of how many boats you thought would be working there?
There were
45 licenses or something, wasn't it? 47?
There was close to 103 patentong licenses.
Oh, it was?
At one point there. And mm-hmm. I mean, anyone can go out and get them. Probably, in terms of boats rigging up, you're realistically looking at 20 or so boats,
mm-hmm.
25 boats out there.
Well, you had the report from last year. That would tell you how many boats were patented on, and I don't think it was 10 or 12.
No, it was probably 5 to 12 most days, wouldn't you say?
No more than 15 at the most.
And that was at the end of the season when a couple extra rigged up.
But them licenses are two on a boat, too. You got to figure that. If it was 15 boats, that's 30 people.
Thank you.
I think it should be extended.
I don't think you're hurting. I think you're helping.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your comments.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Button, I got a question. If the patent area was extended, and that would be extended into March, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so you could potentially have more than 20 boats. I mean, if dams ever closed and people wanted to continue to oyster for 2 more weeks, I guess they could go there if they want to go through the trouble of rigging up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to ask Mr. George here. He's more familiar with that area than I am. Do you think 2 weeks, what would it do?
7 days like you give everybody else, I'd be tickled.
Mm-hmm.
could get 2 weeks. You probably ain't gonna get but 3 or 4 days anyway to 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it blows.
I understand.
Yeah, we're in a pattern. We're getting every 2 or 3 days, you know, we're getting wind in the front and it get a day of pretty weather and then it's back again, you know. Yeah.
Andrew, I think the gear is going to limit how many boats are going to be out there anyway, really. Mm-hmm. Is. But I have gotten some of these there, and they're very large oysters, and they need to be worked. There's not much stress has been on this at all, really. areas up the Rappahannock, it's been 6 and 7, been awesome. So. But these are a lot of large oysters down there, and they, you know what happens to large oysters when they just sit.
They got a silt on them. I don't know what the silt is on. They're all real dark brown.
Mm-hmm.
That they didn't have last year, and I don't know what that is.
I've heard sort of anecdotally that occasionally that sort of shows up there in those areas.
But I've never seen it like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With, you know, that Mr. France there did bring up a good point there is, I mean, if you do extend that one area, everyone who can gear up potentially will be out there, and that service.
I don't think you have been.
It probably wouldn't, you're right.
Not.
But it's there's always that chance that if that's one area and that's the only ground for that extension, that's a possibility. And that's sort of the reason why it's hard to just extend any one area, because you take that risk every time you do that, because you know they're going to stay spread out when there's other areas open. But you know, a week or two, you know,
well, 20 boats, 30 boats wouldn't hurt it. For a week.
And we also...
You got Devlin and Andy Brown.
I say you got
two big rocks.
We also have the thought of crab season and fishing season and everything getting ready to take off, and people preparing for that. So it might not be as much pressure on it as what we think.
Right. You got deep rock. It's a lot of weather out there.
It is.
And it's not like you're moving every day.
Right. Roughly.
I suggest you give it to the ninth.
That's seven days. I would, if SMAC wants to make that recommendation, I don't think I would really come out one way hard against it or the other. I would sort of, you know, I would say that my recommendation would be to leave the season alone and present that as the SMAC recommendation. It probably could. It might go like that. I think that if SMAC wants to make a recommendation, I would recommend that potentially they set a maximum as no more than this date, and then sort of I present that to the commission as SMAC's recommendation is perhaps no more than 2 weeks or 7 working days to keep things even, and that might be a way of sort of setting a maximum limit with SMAC, and I could support that this is SMAC's recommendation that it not be more than that. And that might be a sort of good compromise there.
Well,
kind of get behind collectively.
Yeah.
Is there any data that shows what's been harvested over there as compared to what you projected to be harvested?
Harvest data isn't up to date usually until the following season.
So two to three months there.
It depends on how many boats have been harvesting out there, but everyone's been catching their limit. The 4 or 5 boats that have been out there, they probably missed 2 weeks. So, I mean, we could do some quick math there, but...
64 bushels a day, I would estimate.
So what would be the projection? What were your projection for the harvest for the area?
I'll say it's probably 1/10 for what it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
So that should give you some...
leeway, yeah.
Yeah, that should give you some support right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, this year, sort of the standing stock there is about 7,500 bushels or so is what's mm-hmm. on the areas that we survey. It's doing well out there right now.
Well, I don't know how the commission would...
7 days ain't hurt it, I guarantee you.
I don't know how the commission would consider just a recommendation. I think they would like to hear a motion and something from this committee. So I think, we have several issues here. We have the Pocomoke Tangier issue, and now we have the Patentong issue. I think we should keep those separate. And if somebody would like more discussion or you'd like to make a motion, I guess the floor would be open to that.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the Patentong area be extended through March 9th, which would be 7 days as per Andrew's recommendation of a motion.
We have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second.
Discussion? Anybody? I guess I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
No.
We have one no. All right, since we're through with that for now, let's get back to the Pocomoke and Tangier. I think Mr. Button needs some kind of answer on that.
So I guess if the areas, I think that if we can do them together there, would be the only two areas still open for scraping or dredging, or I guess there's three areas there in February, would be that little portion of Poults Bar, the area there in the James River, area 1 and 3 there on the Smithfield side, and then the Pocomoke, Tangier, Sound area. I'm not sure if you want to...
You want to keep those, divide those two?
I don't think if the motion is to extend any of them, but if it's going to be, we can divide them if you'd like, but we can take them together either way. So it depends on if the discussion is concurrent on what to do with them. So.
I have a question. You know, we talk about this enforcement issue all the time. I mean, for years I've been hearing about on the line, Maryland-Virginia line, there's always poaching. And my question is, you know, if there's poaching every year, it always comes up, and we know what's happening, why are we spending money in that area when we could put it somewhere else where it would be better used in other areas away from the line?
Well, I guess that's sort of the reason why we haven't reshelled those areas when they've needed it. That was sort of the argument that's been made for not reshelling Area 9 and 10, and that's why we haven't done it. And it's one of those, well, if you don't do it, then that area is going to decline and it's going to either be poached or let us take it. But, you know, just because that one area, if you do let it go, they're not going to poach there and get every single oyster. So if you let it decline to where there's nothing there because you're hesitant to put something back, particularly when you already have that long list, you know, that can affect what's down further down the sound. So it's one of those, you don't exactly always know where the spat are coming from, but if you let one area go that potentially might be important, you can kind of have some issues there. So it's we don't want to waste shell, you're absolutely right there, but those areas are important areas. They have produced good oysters historically, and it is an area that's important to the folks on the eastern shore that would be good if poaching wasn't a problem there and to get that going again. It's really good bottom. It might take pressure off other areas in the western shore and save some folks a long drive if you did get it going, but it is the reason that, one of the reasons why we haven't shelled that area is because of that concern of poaching.
It makes perfect sense. Thank you. Any other comments on this issue?
Yeah, my, you know, we got Marine Police. They've got a job to do. In the 70s and 80s, we had poaching. But we had better boats and the Beatrams. Two inspectors went out on that line and stayed all day long until the last mariner leaves at 4 o'clock. Lawrence Ayers and Grady Ellis, many a time, have seen them coming in at 4:30 and 5 o'clock. Why can't that be done? Why do we have to forget the Pocomoke and Tangier saying as far as shelling when it's a law enforcement issue? I mean, it's crazy. They're getting paid to do a job. It's time to do it. We've got a plane that's on this side. We've got a pilot that I don't even know how he even lands because he will not fly low. He's up there so high he can't even tell the name of a boat part of the time. You need to get a pilot in that plane. You need to get it back on the shore where it belongs. Sid Adams, they were petrified of him. Scared to death of him. Every one of them are owners. You need law enforcement that's going to do a job. And it's very irritating when the first day of oyster season, there's inspectors on the docks everywhere. But when the Marylanders come out and we're somewhere else, they're not out in the boats. Now, there was three inspectors. There was T.K. Fitchett, Grady Ellis, and can't think of the other one on the seaside there. But they called them. But here's another thing. We lock watermen up on the sanctuaries in Virginia, right? They handcuff them. They carry them to jail. Those Marauders got caught. They didn't get any handcuffs. They got to go back home. The last time, I understand the last one, and not only this, TK and Grady caught, the last Marauder got caught. They called him. He admitted guilt. They had his GPS the whole nine yards. A week and a half later, I cannot think of the inspector's name, but he called him again a week and a half later. When they got to him, he ran. When they got to him, he was 50 foot inside of Virginia. That's when they called him. But he was well over that when they seen him. My understanding is Brandon told him it wasn't far enough. After he had been called a week and a half before that, I don't care if he was over 25 feet. He was far enough to be fined again. I mean, when a judge looks at when he comes up there before them, and a week and a half later, he's got caught again. You know what he is? He's just a plain violator. I mean, in my understanding is he didn't get anything out of it. It was a plea bargain deal.
I understand.
So,
I understand what you're saying.
It's very frustrating. It is.
You know, on every river that we have, in every private public industry that we have. You know, we have calls of this all the time.
Yes.
I mean, everybody knows it's happening. And with limited law enforcement and us being so shorthanded, it gets difficult.
Well, the one thing they need in the Pocomoke Tangier stand is decent boats. When Steve Bowman took the Beatrice from there, he just well took the officers too. I wouldn't be caught dead in Tangier stand and what them boys have to ride.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's rough water. Pocomoke stand is rough.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take a Carolina skiff or a 25-foot Grady and go out there and be comfortable all day long. The Beatrum, you could. Something's got to be done. It's no need to give up on the Pocomoke seine for the reason that Marauders are coming over and stealing. We need to address it. You need to take them. You need to handcuff them. You need to tow the boat in and impound it and sell it if you can do it after he's been found guilty. I don't care, you know. I've got private grain on the Marauder line. They're getting more oysters off my grain than I'm getting. it's ridiculous, you know?
I understand your frustration. Let's get back to the question that order now, extension of these areas that we're discussing. Any other comments on that?
Andrew, do you have any numbers on the shaft on and Pulse Well in October, the amount of bushels, do y'all have anything? Any kind of idea on that?
There were only a handful of boats working mm-hmm. out there. They're still
working.
You know, we don't have perfect numbers on that yet. The
mm-hmm.
October numbers are just getting updated, but I don't think it was, we saw a couple boats out there, but I don't
mm-hmm.
think there were a bunch working. And the hand scrape folks, I've heard, they were catching a limit today. They were in by, before noon out there, but
okay.
There wasn't a whole lot there. And
mm-hmm.
the concern about how that area doesn't grow as well is,
mm-hmm.
they're still in
yeah.
that borderline range there.
Yeah, it's a small area, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One more time, Mr. Button. Before any motion is made on this, could you give us your recommendations again?
My recommendation would be to not extend any of the areas at this time open to scrape or dredge, so it would be not to extend any of the areas in the James River that are still open, any of the areas that are in Poulta's there, or the Pocomoke Tangier Sound area. So no extension for any of the scrape areas that are open in February. It would be the staff recommendation at this point, and that could be readdressed if there is another freeze up or some event there at the commission
mm-hmm.
meeting at the end of February. But barring that, that would be my recommendation there to take to the commission in February.
If anybody in our audience has a comment on this,
mm-hmm.
please come forward? All right, would you say? Thank you.
I'm a fourth generation waterman, and I understand the concern here is closing of areas due to over harvesting and the concern of extending them for the welfare of the watermen. Well, there's a lot of watermen that don't leave the James River. I've been there year round. I lost 12 days this year. I'm extended 100 drudge days, 800 bushels, about $40,000. If I lose 12 days, 15 days, 20 days, that's 20%. Mm-hmm. 20% of my income. Now, I don't agree that the James River should be extended. I'm not coming to argue that. Because when you close everything else up, they're going to bum rush us. They're going to scrape it up, clean it up, dredge the same area for 10 years, better. So I'm not asking for that to be extended, but I'm asking that there was 20 boats in Deep Creek alone that got froze in. They all lose that money. And I don't want you to extend it. Really don't, because it's not good for the river. And if it ain't good for the river, it's not good for me or my family or the, you know, the future of the next generation that comes along, which is important to me. But I think maybe something different should be considered. Everybody has an individual quota. All women have an individual quota. 8 bushels a day, 5 days a week. That's 40 bushels. Well, 40 bushels a week is 40 bushels a week. I don't care how fast you catch them. So if you don't extend the James River, which I heard right out the gate that, you know, it's not in the recommendation, my 12 or 15 days is gone. My wife, my kids gone. You know, new tires for the truck, new wheel for the boat. Those things that never could have covered, it's gone. So for future, you know, maybe you should think that 40 bushels a week could be 40 bushels a week if I catch them in 2 days or if I take all 5. Because who's going to, you know, who's going to take care of my 12, 15% of my gross income that I've lost this year? I just wanted to, you know, get a bugging ear on that. Thank you.
Anybody have comment on this?
I think they do something like that up in Delaware. They give tags and let everybody catch a certain amount. I mean, just for what it's worth.
No, they usually do that up there, and their season lasts about 2 weeks. So, you know, it's sort of a matter of...
Well, they got those big machine boats over there, too.
It would be a sort of major shift to go to that route there in terms of how the rotation system works, but, you know, it's something that could be addressed, but I don't know if now's the time.
So you're saying not to open any of these areas, but to have in consideration if we do get some more bad weather, it could be brought up at the commissioner meeting at the end of the month.
I would specify potentially, I guess, ice as bad weather, you know, preventing, you know, it's February, so there's going to be some wind and waves, and, you know, but I would say that if you're prevented from leaving the dock kind of weather by ice, it, you know, another freeze up would be.
Yeah, that's the major hold up there, ice.
All right. Does anybody want to make a motion on Mr. Button's recommendation, or do they have something else in mind?
I think his strategy is appropriate.
I'd like to make a motion. I'll make a motion to support staff recommendation.
All right.
With the exception, or, you know, just remake the point over again that if we do get ice in, then that needs to be open. Staff will be in touch with each locality. So I'd like to make a motion.
Now, do we understand the motion that the recommendation from Mr. Button that to close on schedule unless we get ice and then to bring it before the commission for discussion and action? Is that the right motion, Dan?
Yes.
Do we have a second? Do we have a second, Mr. Callum? Any more discussion? Let's call the question. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimous. All
right. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to thank Mr. Jenkins and Mr. West for taking the time to come down here and speak before the committee and thinking about these issues and taking your time to be here.
Absolutely. It's important that we hear from you, and we certainly want to hear from you and your opinions on all this. Thank you. Mr. Button, I guess we'll go on to the next subject.
All right.
This, I guess, brings us on to the oyster replenishment plan for this year. I was jokingly call it the State of the Oyster Address here. So, I'm sure you've seen this chart before. It's an updated version of what Jim's been providing for many years before I was here. Recently, I guess you can see here, we'll switch and we'll cut out the private harvest there, and this is just the public harvest. And you can see that in 2014 and 2015, we sort of, a little bit of a peak there at close to 300,000 bushels. Consequently, that was not exactly similar to the season that we're having now in terms of areas that are open, but that was the last time that Area 1 and Area 6 and Area 7 came into the rotation along with York River Area 1. And that was also following a pretty strong recruitment event in previous years. And recently we've seen a little bit of a decline there in the public oyster harvest. In part, this is probably due to the sort of lower recruitment that we've seen in 2013 and 2014. The good news is that in 2015 and 2016, we had pretty consistently good spat sets in most of the areas on the western shore. The Tangier Sound was, you know, a little bit below average, but not terrible. The Pocomoke Sound hasn't really gotten that same good spat set that a lot of the other areas have experienced in recent years. So we planted some shell there, but it hasn't gotten the same set that a lot of the other areas have. That being said, with the sort of Herculean effort that everyone put into sort of figuring out the harvest control efforts and the process of going through there, sort of that extra fishery effort that was a concern of many of you coming into the fishery isn't really a concern anymore. There's still, I mean, we have a target of 650 harvesters, and a number of people with user fees has been hovering around sort of 900 or so. So there are some people who might jump back into it, but the sort of fears that a lot of people would rig up boats and there'd be a whole bunch of other folks jumping into the fishery are less of a concern now. So really, the limiting factor in kind of the public fishery side of things will be, we can't really make a consistent batch that happen, but we can come up with a decent fisheries management plan and continue shelling the areas when they get below that 5-liter threshold. You'll notice that there is some considerable variance, I guess, in the level of general funds that we might have available to us this year. There's a chance that they could be increased, but we're not really sure. So if the general funds remain the same, the replenishment plan will probably look similar to it to how it has in past years. If we do get some increased funding, we'll be able to shell more areas, we might be able to get a little creative with some other ideas there in terms of, if we have some funding to go around, we can bring that sort of long list, you know, back up to where it should be, get a lot of the areas that haven't been shelled. We'll sort of focus our efforts there first and go from there. So that sort of covers the background on where we are and where we're going. As you know, the costs have gone up considerably, you know, since 2010, close to a 400% increase in what it costs to put a bushel of shell overboard. You know, so we went from planting it, you know, anywhere from less than $2 a bushel back then to, you know, over $4 a bushel in some areas. So it keeps going up, the cost, and we haven't gotten much in the way of more funds to do it, but we're hopeful that we will this year. So that's some tentative good news there as we get into this plan here. So on the agenda item, we'll kind of, maybe if that's all right with you there, kind of roll that other agenda item into the replenishment plan and kind of address that as we go through.
Yes.
We'd like to discuss, it's the agenda item on establishing a rotation area for the Potomac River tributaries with James River seed transplant, and that will be part of the plan this year. If you want to take a look on page 3 of the plan there, it kind of outlines what we'd be doing. And been working with staff and some members of the advisory committee on coming up with a plan of increasing the yields from moving James River seed. So it's relatively expensive to do, and historically what we've been doing is moving a certain amount of seed, and then following, not even that same fall, that area would be immediately open to harvest. So we've looked at numbers, and I think it's a pretty good consensus that you kind of maximize your yield from seed planting by waiting 12 to 18 months. And the idea, what staff would recommend and would appreciate SMAC's endorsement of would be allowing areas that are planted with seed to rest until the following season. And so we plan on moving what we didn't plant last year, 5,000 bushels to the Nominee area and 5,000 bushels to the Comico River. This is the standing stock of the James River seed areas, and we're in pretty good shape there currently. These are the areas that we've planted in the past. So it's this is the Nominee areas there. This is what's open right now, and this is sort of a breakdown of the baler ground in the area. And those highlighted areas in yellow are the areas that have been planted and have been open recently to harvest. These are the areas in the Comico that we planted recently. And these are the areas highlighted on that online map that you may be familiar with, the areas that are open ground. As you can see, there's a fair amount of baler bottom there. There might be some local knowledge of some areas that potentially could have some oysters on that we haven't recently planted, or potentially some areas that might be good for seed planting that we could take a look at. But the idea would be there's roughly sort of six to eight areas that we'd probably put into the rotation between those three rivers. And two rivers will be planted in 1 year, and then those areas that were planted in that river will be left to rest. The following year, two other rivers will be planted. And the other areas that were planted would be open to harvest. And you sort of get an overlap, so every second year a river would get a double dose of seed, if you will, and that has an added benefit is there'll be more oysters sort of in closer proximity to each other. So there's a chance, I know it's the spat sets are historically low there, but if there's more oyster shells in these areas, it gives you an opportunity to not only increase your yields, but if there is a natural spat set, then those oysters are there when you can take advantage of it. So that would be more or less the outline of the plan there, and staff would recommend that we move those that 10,000 bushels to those areas and sort of come up with the details of exactly where the areas would be open the following year at a later SMAC meeting when we're getting ready to establish that season. But the idea would be to plan areas and not open them immediately. And so the estimated cost of that would be sort of $10 a bushel to move seed up there.
Yeah, do you want us to comment on that now, or just save our comments until you've gone through this whole thing?
If there's any pressing, we can go ahead and do the comments on this one, I guess, since it was sort of a separate agenda portion, and we can kind of roll through the rest of the plan if that's permissible with you. Does that work?
Yeah, that works. Okay. That works. Anybody have anything to say on this? Comments? I know when I discussed this with Mr. Button, it was because, you know, it seemed like in these tributaries, and I'm from this area, as soon as we planted them, we planted them in the spring, the next fall, oyster boats out there, you know, tonging and beating and banging on a bunch of little teeny oysters. And we don't get any yield from it. Every time you keep one big one, you're knocking or killing five or six little ones stuck to it. And we thought maybe if we give them that extra year to get bigger, close that area up, make them in kind of a rotational area, but that we could get more yield for what we're putting there.
That's a smart statement right there. You know what you're talking about.
And that way,
how many boats work up in this area?
Six or eight at the most, really, because there's nothing been planted there for a couple of years.
When I talk, it takes a second or two to like, you know, you all get muted out. So I didn't quite hear you. I'm sorry about that. Just wait a second and then give me the answer again. I apologize.
Yeah, I would tell you probably six or eight in the Yokomica, the same in Nominee. I'm not sure about the cone. But there haven't been there has not been any oysters planted.
There's six or eight in the Yokomico. There's six or eight in the Nominee. And if my calculations is right, we're spending $100,000 on this.
Yep, that's right. That's you know, but all these boats are working. They have to come to James River or Rappahannock River or somewhere else. Because there's no oysters in.
Maybe I'm nobody to say you don't need to go here, or there, or anywhere. But is somebody else? I mean, am I the only one feels like this that we're spending $100,000 on 12, 16 people?
No, sir.
No, you're right.
I agree with you.
We ride for 5 hours.
He needs to go somewhere where the employment is, where the bulk of the oyster, whether it be the Rappahannock, York, James, here, anywhere. But I mean, $100,000 on 16 people, something. Maybe I didn't go to college, but that's a lot of money.
That is. But I can tell you that. I don't know how many years it was, 10 or 15 years ago, this program, Nominee, was planted, and it was left alone until the oysters got big enough, and just in that one area, it was over 100 people tonguing.
Well, I'll take your word for it.
Point well taken.
Andrew, for comparison, Area 7, when y'all moved the seed up there, how many bushels did y'all plant in Area 7?
That was about 3,000 or so bushels there, just a couple loads.
Okay.
And that was those areas that there was some seed moved from the Coratomin. Mm-hmm. And some seed moved up to Area 6 when Ferry Bar got a really good bat set there. So there was seed moved up there in 2014 and 2015. And I guess to try to address Dan's point there a little bit, I guess it's sort of that since the bat sets are so low in these areas that there really wouldn't be like any oyster, public oyster fishery really at all in these areas if we didn't do something there. And if it does work there, then as Mr. France was saying there, that might be anywhere from probably realistically maybe about 20 or so people consistently work up there, and that's 10 boats that would be potentially taking stress off other areas. So it's not usually cost effective, but this is sort of an experiment that it might end up being cost effective if we do this. So in the past we opened it right up, and this is sort of I tried a little bit something different at kind of a similar level to what we've been doing, and see if we can make it work. And if it makes sense to make it to go this route, then You know, we might have something there, but if we don't show much progress for it, then mm-hmm. it is expensive to move seed. That's why we only sort of do a little bit at a time.
Yeah, but Andrew, what I'm getting at is you're putting 5,000 in each river. What, I mean, if you're going to experiment, do one of them. You just said you put 3,000 in Area 7, which are right behind it. And I don't know how many people have made money off that, but it's been a good amount of people making money off that. It's been a good, I'm sure Tommy could probably give you the numbers on how many people there I can't think of his name, the president of the budget could probably give us the numbers on that. How many people have been working in there for 3,000 bushels for half the cost, or almost half, and how much the shuckers have made, the packers have made. We're going to spend $100,000 on an experiment for 16 people. I mean, at some point in time, it's got to become cost effective. If there's some point in time when you're going to say, well, you know what?
Political
back in the 60s, it was great. Back in the 70s, they were looking for something out of the woodwork. But for some reason, it's not happening now. And I just think that's an awful lot of money to be experimenting with.
I would have to agree with Dan there. You're talking, every year we talk about how precious this $2 million is that we get to put towards restoration, and you're putting 5% of it, again, as he said, to less than 20 people's benefit on an experiment. Maybe if you do luck out and get that other $1.5 million that you think may come from somewhere, then we could revisit putting 5% into an experiment, because again, at that point, it would be a much smaller percent. But with the guaranteed $2 million, putting 5% of that on an experiment, I can't sit behind that.
Well, I guess in terms of the funding issue, this would come from the non-general funds, and if it has sort of support,
it's still funds. It's still funds.
So you can't think of a place it'd be better to put it.
Moving to James River seed. Well,
yep.
We've moved a small amount to other areas before.
No, that's not what I'm asking. You can't think of a better place to put it that would be more effective,
or that you could get more bang for the buck.
What's the yield up there? Is that yield pretty good on the Navanai? The seed that you get, do you get a decent yield on it? Just because you've got 10 boats now, it's possible you could work 20 boats. 30 boats, maybe.
The Namanai has been close to one-to-one return. The other areas have usually been a less than one-to-one return, doing it the way that we've been.
I've been under the understanding that the James River tend to produce butt out there.
Hey, if I got one-to-one off James River seed, I wouldn't be sitting here. I wouldn't be in business.
No, and if you're getting less than one-to-one, you're not spending the money properly if you're getting less than one-to-one return on it. You're losing money on the less on the one. I mean, it's... You're breaking even on one-to-one.
It is possible that there is some under-reporting up there, too, but it's...
Oh, it's possible.
That doesn't happen. Yes, we have some... Ms. Kell.
Just for general knowledge, what size areas are you looking at as far as rotation? How large...
Most of these areas are less than the areas that are planted are less than 5 acres, so they're relatively small.
So you couldn't put 100 people to work in there if you tried, unless they tied up alongside one another.
Well, the biggest areas there are they're spread out there is close to 10 acres there, but most of them are in that sort of 5 acre range. The areas that are planted, the areas that are open are slightly larger there, but those are the areas that we do plant.
What would be involved with, getting a work group of people that know that up there and just identifying, a small area somewhere to start? I mean, I do like the idea of, addressing whatever's going on up there and look at why it's not producing. But, could you do it in a small manner and at least take a look at whether this is going to work for down the road?
I think we could probably put a work group together. Are you volunteering there, Tommy? Or?
No, I know absolutely nothing about that area.
Ronnie Bevins doesn't have some statistics.
Well, when the boats plant the seed there, what line were they carrying
around? Realistically.
Yes. That's a good point.
It depends on the boat doing it, but usually they're planning in that one truckload at a time, so that 400 to 600 bushels.
So in other words, you could still do it, but you could do it in a smaller scale.
That's right. Yep.
Well, maybe that's worth considering, because if you're that adamant about putting something there, you could do it on a smaller scale and let the bulk of it go somewhere else where it benefits more people.
No, I mean the numbers there are up to that amount, so there wouldn't be any more than that, and there's no guarantee that we could get people to do it for that price. So if we are always trying to do the most with the least amount of money, but that's sort of an estimate there, and there is a chance that we could do less.
I would recommend that you get people from that area. I mean, obviously the chairman can identify who would know, but it would be critical to have a group of watermen that knew what areas up there were the best and where to take a look at this.
No, and I think part of the reason is there are, I don't know, I don't have exact numbers on the number of watermen that hail from the northern neck there, but that's sort of a big portion of there, and if they collectively want these areas planted, that's one of the reasons that we've done it, because it is coming from their user fees. But user fees are rolled into everything, and we do use them for everything else as well too, so that's one of the reasons that funding is a little bit separate from everything else that's sort of directed just towards shell planting.
How big and I guess this would be a question for the chairman, how big a problem is theft in that area up there?
I would say the main area that you have theft in would be the Nominee. With the Cone and the Oconomy, you know, you have the Bivens Oyster Company and Cowart's right there, and they're there all the time.
Maybe a consideration in what you decide there.
Wayne, had we planted any seed before in these areas?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm Jeff Kellum. Mm-hmm. The seed and shell planting boat for Kellum Brothers. I think it was 10 or 12 years ago when Mr. Doug Jenkins was on. He wanted to try this experiment also, and we planted seed on King Copsco Bar and then Nominee Slip. What happened over that? I mean, there was an experiment. Like I said, we did it probably 12 years ago. What happened?
Mm-hmm. What happened?
Nothing.
Don't know. You never could find the ones on King Copsco.
No.
So they planted them in a good spot.
It's above where they got
them. Yeah. If they saw a bottle in the box.
No, it's all a stone bottle.
Yeah, like I said,
at
the time, that's where we planted where
Dougie
wanted it. I don't know. We did that experiment, though. I didn't know that.
Well, there's been enough places that have been experimented on that you should know places that come to fruition regardless.
Well, these are the areas that have done the best, areas that we have planted. They're sort of, we survey them every year. We do a dredge survey on those areas, and they're the areas that there are some oysters there. So these are the areas that we do plant. So these areas that we have planted that I just showed you here, these are the ones in the cone there that we planted in 2015 and 2016. These are the areas in Yukamako that we planted in 2014 and 2016, and then these are the areas in the Nominee. So it's really, these are the areas that have done the best for this limited program. And we can do less, and it is always a matter of adjusting the funding on where it goes, but this doesn't have to be a hard number here. It's just an estimate at this point. But I think the plan would be that if we did do any seed planting there to get this rotation area going, to see if we could increase yields, because usually these areas are open to harvest immediately, and that's even, I think, in past experiments, how might be one of the reasons why it hasn't been paying off there, is that it's immediately harvested on. I can't speak on poaching or where the seed supposedly went, but these are the areas that we planted. And if we do a rotation area there, maybe we can get some better reporting and encourage the folks up there to make sure that they're letting us know what they got off of it and sort of make the call from there. But this is sort of a plan, and it doesn't have to be, as I said, these sort of dollar amounts are, there's some flex there in what's going to happen, but this is sort of, the plan would be to, if there was anything planted up there, to not harvest it immediately.
Andrew. There's another situation me and Tommy talking is rays are bad up that way. Really, really bad.
The planting time would be as early as we could get it done in spring. And if you do get too close into April, that you do have an issue with rays there.
Good thing, so chew them right to powder.
Yep. So that
make it more sense. Keep talking.
Better old time.
So the early April or late March would be when this would be planted, and hopefully it's been a pretty cold year, and hopefully the rays wouldn't be all the way up there yet. But that is a concern whenever you're moving seed, and that's one of the reasons why we do so little.
$100,000 with a lot of hoping.
You know, my son,
he runs the oyster boat, and he's only 21 years old. And all the different pieces of grounds I got, the ones that has got a lot of seed on it, he doesn't like to work them. And the reason he doesn't like to work them because it does more damage to the future than he does for getting the money right now. Now, a lot of people will go over there and they ain't worried about the future. They just want to get that money they got right now and they ain't worried about the other. But when you put that stuff over there and you start working on it before it grows out, and you're talking of 12, 18 months, I don't know how in the world oysters grow that fast up there, because I can't get them to grow that fast on anything that I got. But, I mean, you know what happens. I mean, you go out there with your rig out there and you catch the oysters, and you know what happens to the seed and everything, that when you put that rig down there, how it kills them. You know, already know all that. I don't have to tell you about that.
Well, these are hand-tong areas, so it wouldn't be quite the same as dredging on them.
I'm just saying, it's you sitting over there, start beating and banging on a big oyster so you can save a big one, and you take those little ones, you're beating and banging and knock them off, and you think those are not in damage in any kind of way whatsoever. That's what he described to you just a little while ago. You know,
I bet you 50% or more of them die that you knock off.
There you go. You see, that's what he's talking about. And you're getting a 1-to-1 ratio. And like I told you, if I got 1-to-1 ratio on what I planted, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now.
Well, that 1-to-1 ratio is the reason for not coming back immediately. That was on that 6-month harvest there. This is giving it close to 18 months to rest. And
well, I think he's got the right idea. It's just if some politician is pushing you to put something over there, you need to mitigate the amount that you're putting there and put some of those oysters somewhere else where they do more people more good. And I think you can figure that out. I don't know what to tell you because I don't know that area at all, but, you know, I can understand the political motivation that you get to do that because I can see that's what happens over here all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is sort of politics aside. It's kind of been what we've done historically, I guess, is move to those areas that don't get a set to sort of keep the people who are working there working there. So it's in the grand scheme of things, yeah, 100,000. Yeah.
I don't think nobody don't want them to work there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that much of the budget is to go up there for 16, 20 people. That I mean, you could do a whole lot more for 100,000 in other areas that support more people. Nobody don't want them not to work up there, but there comes a point in time when it's enough. And, you know, insanity, the definition of insanity is repeat the same thing over and expect a different result. Eventually, it's got to be enough.
Well, I guess to work towards consensus there, is there an amount dollar-wise that would be greater than zero and less than $100,000 that people could be comfortable with to put into the seed program there? I'm not sure, you know, sort of you kind of get into an economy of scale and sort of getting much lower than that, it probably wouldn't happen at all, but we could try for, you know, 5,000 bushels, 200,000 bushels and sort of see what we could get for that, and that might be a way of sort of compromising and still getting it done there and still planting those areas. You know, so this could be 5,000 to 10,000 bushels, $50,000 to $100,000 in that range, sort of see where funding falls out, because there is a little, like I said, a little bit of unsurety there. But if we get a good price for moving seed up there, we could do more, and if we get a bad price, we could do less, but sort of in that range as opposed to a hard number. Would that be a little more of a compromise there?
Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem, you know, doing something on a smaller scale, you know, because, I mean, even though it's a hand-tong area, it will take some pressure off the Rappahannock, you know, if the guys do go there and work, If it works, you know. No, I don't think we need to spend $100,000. Maybe we could do 50 or something like that and try it and see how the seed works. You know, I mean, if an indication of the past, you know, it didn't work that great. So we're kind of taking a chance. But I guess I'd be for trying it, you know, because it would certainly put some people to work up there. But maybe drop the number down some.
Do you think an 18-month window is long enough, or should wait longer?
Well, it kind of depends on the seed that you're moving, I guess. Mm-hmm. If it's really high count, really small stuff, you might want to wait a little longer. But if there's already, you know, lower counts, bigger oysters, those areas, particularly up in the Namanai there, they do grow really quickly there. There's a lot of flow through there, and if you plant them in the right spot, you'd have you can get them to size there in that 12 to 18 months, at least a portion of them, and there'd be some there that you would be culling off. But the tiny little spat, you know, you wouldn't be harvesting those in 18 months, that's for sure.
Well, why couldn't you look at them at 18 months and decide? Then
make a recommendation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, you could.
That's good. Rather than open it up and kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the old rule of thumb was, 16 months for a spat to a 3-inch oyster? That's a general rule I always thought.
That's maybe for a fast-growing triploid, but usually 2 to 3 years for a wild oyster. Yeah. Depending on, I mean, it's very area-specific.
Yeah, some places they won't grow 3 inches in 10 years.
Yeah.
What do you think of the council to be only seed, your transplant?
James River seed are, going to be well over 700, 600, 800, you know, well over, getting up there. There's a really good spat set this year. Most of the areas, the James. So they have a pretty good count.
Yeah, you can come.
7,800 per bushel of seed.
Mm-hmm.
That's low. I sold 5,000 bushels last year at James River. And I was like, the spring says you can't be harvest any of that in 18 to 20 months, 2 years. We're taking it from Pine to Shoal because we're not going to take seed out of the river for to send somewhere else that we could go take and put on our private grounds ourselves. It just doesn't make sense. So
I know you're right.
If any interjection, seeds you plant out of Pine to Shoal from James River ain't going to grow good enough to reharvest in less than 2 years for sure. And the count is, we're getting 300 to 350 oysters count per bushel daily now. So you're telling me it's only double at 3 inches? We're getting over 300 bushels.
Well, that would be sort of the minimum there. I mean, we've seen areas that are up over 1,000 a bushel on our dredge survey there.
You'd be ashamed to plant anything that was less than that.
Let me throw a little something in here. On the Thumb River fisheries, they have a rotational tong harvest areas up in the upper river. And every year, an area comes up to be opened, but it will not be opened unless it's checked in. 70% of these oysters are big enough. So that's something we could throw in there.
Yeah. That would work. They're also giving them 5 years to make it there.
I think, you know, we're beating it to death, but it consensus and what I'm hearing, I think starters is reevaluate the time and agreeing with the chairman. Certainly, it sounds like, you know, that following fall is obviously too soon. And, you know, regardless of what we spend there, you can still identify a plan and come up with a strategy going forward.
No, I think that's a fair point there. So I guess, I mean, the plan would be not to harvest it immediately, and we can perhaps get a work group together there, take a look at it on this fall's survey and next fall's survey and see those areas up there and how the seed's been doing. But I think I'd like to move some seed up there. It doesn't have to be that full amount, you know, just mainly to... If it keeps 20 boats from another area for 2 or 3 months, if it does well 2 years from now, that would be worth doing. And if it continues to not be a success, there's, you know, we're trying something a little different here, and it's not a huge amount of money here at this point, but I think maybe get a work group together there and take a look at that, get some more input from the harvesters up there, and go from there.
What's there now?
These areas, we don't do a patentong survey there on it, but we do a dredge survey on it. These areas, there's some there. I mean, I haven't been out there with a pair of tongs, so it's hard to say off a pair of dredge, but I think most people up there, they haven't been catching a limit there. What would you say?
Well, the start of this in October in the Nominee, six to eight bushels for the first 3 weeks. But the only trouble with Nominee is where the last oceans are planted, you need 22 or 24-foot shafts to get them.
Does it make more sense? I mean, does it make sense to evaluate the gear you're using up there?
I wouldn't. I mean, it's plenty of areas, you know, in the 6 to 9 foot range that you can plant. Yeah.
Can some of those rocks be expanded to be made larger?
No. It's mostly.
I mean,
too
you can
much
do it with
private.
Shell. You can shell it. Would it sink? Mud?
No, it won't sink. But it's just everywhere around is private ground, and there's just nowhere to expand to, really.
Because my thinking is, you know, we're thinking all these rivers are good, but there's times when these rivers died off. I've seen the James River been completely dead for 3 times in my lifetime from storms and hurricanes, and that's nothing for nobody to work on. So if you spread it over some of these other areas, the boats may be able to, if you can get it to the point where it will work, I mean, without spending a fortune, obviously, but
I think Dr.
it
Weston,
would probably be a good thing.
Dr. Weston can add a little to this, but I think there is substrate there.
It's substrate. I mean, there's orchards there. It's just that, I mean, I think one of the big problems is we do get them too early. I mean, and I think the way the Potomac's doing is probably closer to, it may not be 5, but I don't think it's a year and a half. I think it's probably more like
three. Yeah, I think it was set up to be 4, and then they always
set up to be
back.
5, and we came back to 4 up there.
Is that the way it is?
You have to float them to get them to do it in 18.
You know, it's. I think maybe the way to go forward here is to reevaluate them before they're open to harvest, and see if they're up to size there, sort of see what the count is, and if they're getting big. 18 months was sort of to give some people something to do up there, so they wouldn't be in other areas. And 18 months, some of the oysters that are moved up there that are already up to size will be market size. Your yields won't be great, but they might be better than what they have been. But the 18 months was sort of an idea there to increase the yield a little bit without shutting down the fishery there for 3 years when there isn't anything at all. So it's not perfect. In 3 years, we'd probably get more of them up to size. You're right.
Well, there's other bars that can be opened. If we want to downsize this thing and plant one bar and try it out, you know, maybe we could do it that. When it comes, if somebody makes a motion and it's voting, no, I'll abstain from it. just because, you know, I'm so involved into it. So if somebody...
Well, your knowledge is apropos.
Well, I'll be glad to add my knowledge. It's just I'll leave the rest of it up to you, gentlemen.
Your input as well.
Yeah, if somebody wants to come up with an idea or a motion or something.
Well, I think it's appropriate for you guys to do that because I don't know anything about that place whatsoever. But I agree it ought to be substantially less than what he's talking about. So what would be the appropriate amount? What would be the appropriate amount to put over there to make it work? And one of these guys that don't know anything about it will make the motion.
I think it would be hard to get anyone to do it for, much less than probably 50,000 in terms of mobilizing and going through that. I mean, the state's not going to move it, but that might be sort of cut that number in half. That's 5,000 bushels. That's a,
How's that sound there, everybody?
Mm-hmm. Could you just do one river, Andrew, instead of doing both? I mean, if we're going to do the experiment, do one river.
No, we could do you could do one area there.
Which one?
Mm-hmm.
I think you kind of have a better idea there with the rotation if you do two, kind of split it in half. One area might be better than the other. So,
pick one.
The Nominae grows fastest, probably.
Okay.
So, I mean, the Nominae, we could just do half the program there in the Nominae, and that mm-hmm. keeps things.
I mean, I'm
up there.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to tell.
Yeah. I mean, there's only about 20 or so people who work out there consistently, I guess, and it's here and there. Yeah.
Maybe you should talk with some of them, find out the more developed areas where it's mm-hmm. most productive, whatever you could work with.
Well, this area there at the cut there in the Nominae is there's a lot of current through there, and that's where they tend to grow the fastest. I mean, there were some pretty good-sized oysters there on our dredge survey this year. That's probably the quickest-growing area mm-hmm. between the systems.
Wayne, right, I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we take 5,000 bushels at a cost of about $50,000 and take it up to the Nominae and try it and do the experiment, leave them for a while, take a look at it before we plant, and then look at it 18 months to 24 months and see how we make out on it.
24.
Yep, 24.
All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a second. Any discussion? All right, we'll call the question. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Good job.
I abstain. Thank you, Donald. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Button.
I guess that'll take care of that portion of the replenishment plan and that agenda item there. And I think we can readdress the rotational plan there, get a few more folks to input on there. Just glad that you guys were collectively there to weigh in on that. And I think we can go forward with that. Thank you. I guess we'll roll right into the rest of the replenishment plan this year. So we're there on page 3. In the Piangatank and the Great Wicomico River, we've run a successful seed program over the years. Generally how it works is we do a 2-to-1 return, so individuals will sign up. We'll put out a public notice, and they'll sign up for the amount of seed they'd like to harvest there, and they're required to plant 2 bushels of shell back in these areas. Last year, we did the Piangatank. 20,000 bushels were available. This year, on our Patentong survey, some of the standing stocks are down a little bit. There wasn't quite the spat set that we've had in the last years there, so we're thinking that we might just drop down that amount available there slightly, from 20,000 to 17,000 bushels, and see if it'll rebound a little quicker there. The Great Wicomico last year was also 10,000. We didn't get the full amount signed up for, so I don't think everything was harvested off those areas. And the Great Wicomico is pretty stable this year, so we're going to offer that same amount there for seed available for private growers. At the same deal of 2 bushels of shell for any bushel of seed removed, the areas would be allowed to be harvested by ordinary dredge or tong, and two bushels of shell would be planted back, and that would be contracted for there. This is our areas in need of shell. This is the list from this year's Patentong survey. Where we'd have to make decisions a little bit, depending on funding-wise. If we have the full amount that might be floating around, we could probably plant close to the full 900 acres that are in need of shell. If funding remains at the same level, we'd probably be in that 400 to 500 range, and probably the areas that we'd be focusing on in there would come down. So, a lot of the areas we'll get into, but this is a kind of a point that can be visualized right here. And as you can see, this is the Rappahannock, and not every year does the spat, which is a number of that area there on the side right here. This is the number of spat per square meter, and this is the volume of shell per square meter there. And if you see right here, this is sort of 5 liters of shell in the bottom. This includes sort of live oysters and brown shell. And this is sort of when we want to start shelling an area, and if it gets down below that, you sometimes will get some spat set, but that's sort of the threshold there, is right at that 5 liters of shell volume. So all the areas on this list are getting close or are under that 5 liter shell volume. And if you see right here at this 10 liter mark that's on the bottom there, this is when you really start to see spat sets go up considerably. And so that's sort of our target there. And that's what all these areas are based on, is those sort of two numbers there, that you're in pretty good shape once you're over that 10 liters of shell on the bottom. And once you get below 5, you might see a spat set, but you don't usually see consistent sets there. And this is sort of the whole, all rivers combined, and I know it's big statistics there, so it's not always accurate, it doesn't always line up this well, but you can, the main takeaway is you can kind of see that threshold there again at 5 and at 10. Once you get above that, that's when you start seeing lots of spat, and that's sort of what the replenishment plan is sort of based on, those areas, to try to keep them in that target range. The James River this year is doing pretty good. Based on the 2017 fall survey, we're going to take a look again at it, those areas particularly in February that were open up, and we're planning on reshelling the areas in the lower James River. There's a list of the areas that are going to be needing shell there at the end of your packet. This is our that's the table one there, the areas that would be shelled. Rappahannock Area 1 was the harvest area that was opened up this October. And in the Rappahannock areas, we usually try to come back and shell the areas that were just opened and allow recruitment to happen, and then that three-rest period. So Area 1 there in the Rappahannock would be on the list. Most of the areas there are starting to get low in shell, and they were just harvested on. So we'll reshell those areas, as well as Area 6 up the river. Get those areas reshelled that were just worked. up the river there. The York River, there's some areas there that could need shell, and depending on funding, we might go up the York River again, but we did plant there last year. So if our funding does increase, we'd probably try to get up to Aberdeen's and two of the Timberneck areas to plant shell there. But there's about 45 acres or so there that would be in need of shell. So depending on funding, we might not go to the York. Sort of your costs increase every time that you go to a new system. So if we can keep them down and go to less areas, particularly if we've been right back there, that's usually the route that we take. York River Area 1 and 2 are also not going to come into rotation again. The next area to be open this coming fall would be the Mobjack area. So these areas will get some more rest, and they were reshelled in the 2017 season. Tangier didn't receive much in the way of shell last summer. So we're planning on this year, particularly the areas that were worked last year and some of the areas that got worked this year, reshelling. But the areas there, mainly, I guess, Hurley's, and we call them by number there, but it would be most of the thoroughfare areas and Fox's Island area up there would get shell there in the Tangier Sound. So area one is what was open this year, and you can see that the number of markets, this was before the harvest season there, we're doing all right. The number of smalls did come down a little bit. This is a very large area there, so we're up a little ways, but area two that's scheduled to open up next year, which has a lot more ground there in the Pocomoke. You can see that back in 2011 and 2012, there was considerably more oysters there in the water. And we've come up a little ways there, but it's still not near those levels that we were talking about earlier. So, it's not not everything's rosy in this portion, particularly because this area has a little more areas that are heavy in the Pocomoke, where we haven't seen those consistent spat sets. So, we're planning on putting some shell potentially down in just a Nancock rock there in Pocomoke. And then if we can get things going, pending funding-wise and some other portions of the replenishment plan, areas 9 and 10 in the upper Pocomoke are on the shelling list. That's really kind of dependent. If there wasn't considerable funding increase, it would be hard to justify going to those areas, since they're going to need a little bit more shell than what we have. And there's a lot of other areas that need the funds. They're always in need of shell. So this is just sort of the wish list, and then we'll go down from there. the Great Wicomico area, we established a rotation there for the first time this year. These areas are getting relatively low in their culch levels. So this area would be reshelled this year. It hasn't received any shell in a while, and they're getting below that. Most of the hand scrape areas here are getting below the that 5-liter threshold. That's just the list that you have there on table one there. This would be the total for all the areas in need of shell this year. It would be close to 1.16 million bushels of shell is what we'd like to put down, and that would cover close to 900 acres. And that would be the shell planting portion of the replenishment plan. And that's, like I said, those areas there in the Tangier, the lower Rappahannock, the upper Rappahannock that was harvested, and the lower James would be the target areas. And then if funding increased, the areas there in 9 and 10, along with some other plans for that area would happen too. And that's the replenishment side of shell planting. And this year, you'll note that really the goal is the most shells for the least amount of money on the most areas. The shell dredge, there was some concern about whether that would be an operation. It seems like that's not going to be a problem this year. It's going to be digging shell for us. I know there's always been discussion about house shells and dredge shells. My concern isn't which shells it is. It's sort of the overboard price and the area there and not basically getting the most shells over for the least amount of money is there. So all the house shells that we can buy for the price that we set, we'll purchase this year, and then the rest will probably go to the shell dredging. And it's sort of a matter of availability. And I'm hesitant. I know the price has been set at $2 a bushel. There's lots of people that are willing to pay more than that, so it's always unknown how many bushels of shell that we get this year. It's if you go up in that price, then you're getting less shells for less money, and that takes away from other shells that you could be potentially planting there. So it's sort of a delicate balance there. But the real concern is the overboard price, and if the overboard price for house shells is significantly lower than dredge shells, and there's enough money to get the dredge shell rig mobilized, then we could potentially buy more house shells. It's really a matter of if things stay the same, probably the price of house shells will stay the same. If our funding increases, we're going to want more shells, period. So there might be some more wiggle room there. But at this point, it's kind of too soon to say we're going to have this much and we want to jump into that house shell market if there isn't enough to get the shell dredge mobilized and plant the shell here this year.
Yeah. I would just like to hear the justification for why house shells overboard. I'm not talking on the pile, but I'd like to hear the justification of why the house shells planted aren't worth what the dredge shells are.
I'm not saying that they're not worth what the dredge shells are. I'm saying that we'd like to plant the most shells that we can for the money that we have. So,
because obviously you're not going to get the house shells And first off, I'm like the chairman, I'm going to abstain from this because obviously I'm one of the house shell folks and have continued to sell you shell for this price, but we're never going to increase that program. And if you get a call on June 1st that the shell dredge has torn up that $250,000 pump and it isn't worth doing, you know, we're really in a scrape. So I do have grave concerns that we're letting the house shell program completely deteriorate. Just putting all of our eggs in a dredge shell basket with something as fragile as this. I don't know how many committee members have seen this shell dredge, but it's far from new. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's fair to continue to let the house shell go just to drive the price down and continue to pay more and more for the fossil shell.
No, and that's
what is the price of the house shell put overboard compared to the price of the dredge shell put overboard?
This last year the limited amount of house shell that we put overboard was less than $3 a bushel. And the dredge shell varied from, you know, about that to over $4 a bushel. It's really kind of area dependent. A lot of the cost of the dredge shell is the mobilization cost and the transport costs. And if you plant more, those costs come down. With the house shell, I mean, the costs would go, they're more consistent, I guess, with the house shell, as you have the set price there and the planting price. But you don't really get a discount if you get more shell necessarily. That's the difference there.
Well, if you're a dollar cheaper, ain't that a discount?
Yeah, no, that is. It's just a matter of if we buy all the house shell that we can there, and it is generally cheaper. It has been than the dredge shell there. But if we go up in the price and start getting into the market to compete for house shell, then there isn't necessarily enough money to do everything else that we want to do. So it is a difficult situation to be in.
But you don't have to buy them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make the decision whether, you know, I really don't think it's a bid on the house shells. It's an option, but, you know, I think it's fair to say you're not competitive. We have not been competitive for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, the market's where you set it. It's not where the commission sets it. It's not.
Well, I mean, the setting of the price part of it, I mean, I know we've discussed it at other SMAC meetings about whether you could put it out for bid, say 50,000 bushels or something like that to get the best price, get the house shell competing against the dredge shell and have it be fair. And that is a possibility that I'd be open to. You know, potentially doing it like that. And I'm open to planting the most shell for the least amount of money. And if we don't get any offers there to buy shell at the price we're willing to pay on the pile for it, we do have the option of putting it out for bid. That's a decision that we can make. So it's really a matter of do we want to go that route to open up bidding to everybody for the same work.
Why wouldn't you put a price out for this is what we're willing to, just like every other project you do, this is what we're willing to pay in this tributary for this amount of bushels, and you know the shell dredge guy is going to bid on it, and at least give the house shell folks around the bay the opportunity to at least participate that in at a fair market value.
No, the plan would be to plant the largest quantity of comparable shells for the lowest area dependent price, and that's likely going to be a combination of house, fossil, and dredge shells. So we haven't put out the request for proposals yet. You know, if we can do that in a way that it allows house shells folks, if they have an opportunity to get in the process, to get some competition going there, which I think would be a good thing.
It would as well put some competition on the shell dredge, which has had none in the past
ten years
or more.
I absolutely agree with you
actually
that
actually put out on a bid, and they could, instead of signing a contract, put in a bid of their own and maybe make the whole thing more competitive.
And that dredge it's going to, you know, they're going to set a certain price and a certain amount before they'll even operate. So, you know, that'll have to be figured into the equation, too.
Have you ever figured out which is the best strike and chill?
It, over a large portion, it doesn't make a difference. I mean, in a setting tank, that's one thing. But we've seen higher sets on fossil shell 1 year, and that same year, right next to it, there's been house shell that's had a lower set. So it's more dependent on the area and the timing and the spat set than the actual shell there.
Is that way it runs every year, or can it reverse?
It can be some years it can be house shell does better, some years it can be fossil shell does better, and some years one area the fossil shell will have done better, and 1 year the house shell will have done better.
I'd like to see you put some house shells on shell rock where the fossil shells are. It's not a little boatload just to see.
We have a question from the audience. I'm sorry, Ms. What, Dr. West?
Well, I mean, one thing that you see is that I would consider a live oyster as a house shell. Okay. And we're not seeing, in Pocomoke, you're not seeing any spat on live oysters either, speak of. So in Pocomoke, it's a no spat issue that's going on up there. But, I mean, if we truly get this increase in price and the budget, that'll be the first time that we actually have this wiggle room. We've not had wiggle room with $2 million. If we get $2 million again, we don't have any wiggle room because that dredge is not going to work if he doesn't get a certain amount of money. So that's the reason we've been kind of stuck on this thing and not had a lot of options. If this money truly comes through, we'll be in a much better place to actually put bids out like you're talking about. So if anybody gets to talk to their legislators, it's a really good time to talk to them between now and the end to up that price, up that budget.
At some point in time, you're going to consider some other medium besides shells, concrete, gravel, rocks, like they do down in the Louisiana areas?
We'll get to that here in a minute. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I have a question from the audience.
Okay,
all right.
If house shells cost three something to put overboard, and dredge shells is four, and you want to put the most shells for at least the amount of money, why are we messing with the dredge?
Well, I guess right now there's probably roughly 300,000 bushels of house shell available, and if we bought them all for that price, that wouldn't cover what needs to be shelled, and then there wouldn't be enough left over to get the shell dredge to finish the program. So that's where that the current funding levels are a sticking point where it's hard to get any competition going because we're kind of, stuck between a shell and a shell. That's sort of where we are now is we'd like to buy as much house shell as they'll sell us for a fair price, but it's hard to offer a competitive price, I guess. If you get all that, you don't have the shell to plant because the other source won't mobilize, and that's sort of where we are now, and it's a tough place to be. But as Jim was saying, if this funding does increase, there's opportunity to get some competition going. We'll have some wiggle room, and it's potential that we can plant all the house shell that's out there, and still have the fossil shell dredge cover the balance that's a needed shell. So that's where we are on that. Is that? That makes sense, Dan?
Yeah, it's a little clearer.
All right. We have a question from the audience.
I got more comments than I got questions. I don't agree with Andrew on the point of it doesn't matter whether host shells are better than fossil shells. It's the amount of shells going overboard. I don't agree with that. If we're getting one, maybe none, maybe two spats on a fossil shell, and a host shell, we get three or four strikes on it, we're better off with the host shell than we are fossil shell. Just because we're getting them this deep on the bottom ain't giving us more oysters. In Broad Creek, opened 3 years ago, it had been planted with host shells, and it was phenomenal. After that was opened and caught, it was planted again with fossil shells. And y'all gentlemen that worked it know it was nowhere near what it was when it was opened 3 years ago. That was fossil shells. And I buy a lot of oysters from the guys, and the guys are telling me that these go back a little bit, back when Jim was involved 10 or 15 years ago and we had no resource, it didn't matter how we planted the shells. We could put them this deep. It didn't matter. We weren't covering anything up. Now we're going in with this 150-foot barge with 15, 20,000 bushel shells on it. And they're going in, and in 45 minutes, they're unloading. And they're piling it on top of the resource that we have that is alive. Mm-hmm. They're killing it out. We need to come up with, we're demanding that we're going to use fossil shells. We need to come up with a better way to spread these on our live oyster beds instead of smothering them. You know, what's the point of y'all knocking small oysters off in Broad Creek? We'll come around and carry it right over and take it over.
Thank you.
Well, I'd say that area, I believe six right now that's been open had lots of, that had close to a lot of the seed that came up there that people are working on now came from Ferry Bar in the lower Rappahannock that saw the highest spat set on fossil shell that we've seen in recent history there, and that was moved up Area 6 and is being worked on now, and it's part of the reason why the season's been so good up there.
That fossil shell had my new shell put on back on top of it, and that's the seed we just backed up and took up
water. Mm-hmm. Andrew, how many bushels of shell would be needed to replenish all 900 acres if the funds go up?
1.162 million bushels. Yep.
Okay. And so that's supplemented from the 300,000 house shells.
That's all the shells. I mean, there's some other areas that we could probably find that needed shell, but that's sort of the major harvest areas that we've been replenishing right now. That's sort of our target area, yep.
Okay.
How about turning the shells over? We did it for the state years ago. Well, I guess it's been 50 years ago.
Most of the surveys after the fact, I mean, there's sediment issues there. It might work on a small scale, but most of the time you can't really tell the difference long term if you turn the shells over there.
Well,
this is mainly a matter of the shells aren't there. They've dissolved, so it's not really you're turning over old shells. There's just the shells just aren't there.
We did it before, but we didn't do it in two or three days. We did it for over 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We all had dredges. We used the crab dredges. It was about 7-8 foot dredges. Took the cotton bag out, left the chain bags in, and had good teeth on them. And we turned that thing over, and they had some of the biggest strike that year after that there's ever been up there.
Well, most of these areas are hand scrape or dredge areas, so they're getting turned over pretty good.
But they're not getting down turning it over.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the issue is that there's not that shell base there anymore. It's pretty deep. So this is a matter of putting shells back that aren't there, including not just turning up the bottom more when there's nothing.
Mr.
Yes.
To the point from the audience, what would be involved with looking at planting fossil shells with the smaller boats or smaller barges or something as opposed to what we're doing?
Well, it's probably a matter of cost, and I think that we are trying to be as careful as we can with planting these boats. So most of these big areas... You know, we don't plant any heavier than 1,000 bushels an acre, regardless of what we're planting on the bottom. So we're not doing what we did when we were building reefs, where we were planting them 12, 18 inches thick. I mean, we're putting them out, 1,000 bushels is one oyster shell thick, and that's sort of what we do. So we're out there when they're being planted, and we're out there making sure.
How do you achieve that with these barges in these small areas? You know, when you go to York, I mean, just being fully honest and looking at this and what, you know, Dr. Weston's here and has, we could add to it. But, you know, in York River, you know, 2 years ago, we had to get a smaller boat because you couldn't even get the barge on the piece of bottom.
That's because of depth, though. That was depth, not size.
Irregardless, he can't be moving that barge around.
Well, in that area, we didn't do it.
You know, why wouldn't we look at doing something differently there?
Well,
we've seen these barges in Temples Bay. I got videos on my phone. He didn't move inside the length of this building. And his object is to get those shells off of that barge as quickly as he can.
Mm-hmm. Well, in small areas like that, we can stipulate, and we have stipulated in our contracts, that they need to be able to plant in certain depths of water. And we have folks... our replenishment department out there watching them, and we do our best to try to keep them moving. And you do sometimes, you do have an issue where a barge will get hung up, and you have a minute where they might put up a little pile. That did happen up in New York there, but we do our best to keep them moving, keep them in the area, and as long as you can keep the water cannon that's blowing the shells off the barge moving back and forth, and we're out there supervising them, doing our best to keep those shells, you know, appropriately thin. In areas that do have a lot of live oysters on them or will be open up to harvest, we do plan a little lighter than that. I mean, you know, so it's we do our best to not cover up any oysters. And when you're planting that thick, there might be a lump here and there that you get into, but for the most part, planting one oyster shell deep isn't going to smother anything on the bottom there. But we
Mr. Button, proceed, please.
You've got a way to plant.
Well, we've been planting this way since 1960. I mean, it's that's why the Virginia the has a public oyster fishery.
We monitor right
now. That's not accurate. No. Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
That's not accurate. We use these fossil shells to build areas, and we planted up to 1 million bushels of shells as late as the 90s of house shell on top of it. And the successes we've seen from the beginning of this, and I would defer to Dr. Wesson, is a result of house shells. It was not seed. It was not fossil shell. It was the house shell program that Dr. Wesson continued in spite of the lack of success we were having. We continued the house shell program, and we've reaped the benefits of it. I'm not saying that I realize we can't use house shells to replace. I mean, the plants are gone. They're not coming back. You're not going to have any more shell than we've got now. But just because we've got the money and can get the fossil shells, I can't honestly think that someone thinks we're perfectly planting these shells with a 150-foot barge, 20,000 bushels at a time, that we were doing using boats that carry 1,200 to 3,000 bushels, and we're moving all over the rock.
Well, you know, I think, you know, anybody, all of us are level-headed, you know, smart people, and realize that an operation of that size and that volume certainly isn't going to get perfect results. You know, you're going to have little piles here and piles there and be on this and hung on that, and I mean that's just going to happen, you know.
What are we sacrificing for that?
Yeah.
What are we covering up on the bottom of this by sacrificing all
that? Is it the best bang for the buck, which is what everybody keeps saying we're after?
Just because you can say I planted this many thousands of bushels, I don't think 68
inches of oysters per.
Well, I'm not advocating by any means not planting house shell, and I'm
so if you bought all the house shell that you could get, you still wouldn't be able to get enough.
That it would probably cover, you know, a third of what needs to be planted, if that. And we've been planting fossil shells in this light layer on lots of areas, and Tommy's correct, we haven't been planting on top of harvest areas since 1960, but we've been using fossil shells for a long time in Virginia there. So that is correct that we haven't been planting fossil shells on top. We didn't really plant on top of harvest areas until sort of Jim's era there in the 90s.
But the main thing is that because we use this 5-liter thing on when we go, it means you're going to areas that are as close to being barren as you can be in an area, and there's just nothing to cover up. And we patted on right after them, and there's no difference in the standing stock before or after. The only thing is, there's more shell. We go from having less than 5 liter up to 10. The number of live oysters is the same. So there's no evidence at all of covering anything up.
Well, all the areas there on on area one. We're not going to plan every single area there. It's just as Jim was saying there, the areas that are lower than that 10 or 5 limit. So areas that are showing up with lots of live oysters, they don't need planting because that's up there. So we're not just going to go back to every single area in the lower Rappahannock, regardless of what's on the bottom and covered in shell. It's only going to be the areas that are below that level there where there isn't a lot of oysters there or shell.
You proceed, please.
So this is these are proposed alternative substrate areas, and there's no guarantee that any of this will happen. It's sort of more of a wish list if there's partnerships that want to do some experimentation in small amounts. We'd like to get good at doing alternative substrate because it's sort of acknowledged that actually, let me we'll save that for last, actually, here. Let me get to we'll do the Seaside Eastern Shore real fast. That's on page 4 there. This is a ongoing partnership that we've had with the Nature Conservancy where we're thinking that this grant will be available, and they've given us funds to plant small areas there on the seaside with shells, and this year it looks like it'll be similar to last year. The general funds there for seaside shell planting, that's kind of a maybe there, so it depends, but we're looking at approximately 11 acres at 10,000 bushels of shell at $250 an acre there for seaside planting. That would be part of the plan this year. And that $100,000 there in general funds is, you know, that's a maybe there. It might not happen. So
have they had a pretty good season on the seaside this year?
They're still going strong right now. So there's most of the harvest out there. There's a limited number of folks who work out there. You know, they do get a pretty good price for their oysters out there, so there are oysters coming in. And last year, actually, most of the Nature Conservancy funds in previous years have gone to sanctuary areas. And last year, their funds actually, we planted some areas open to harvest, close to 3 acres with Nature Conservancy funding. So it's been a very successful partnership out there that we've had with them. And these areas we planted with locally available dredge shell down there in the North Hampton area. So this is on page 5 there. This is a little bit of a wish list. There's no guarantee that this will happen, but the Pocomoke Sound, as you've heard from Don there and Dan, that there's been some poaching concerns there, and as a result, that we haven't done any reshelling in portions of the upper Pocomoke in a long time. So the plan potentially this year would be at a minimum, in the last 2 years, we've hired a local waterman to move some shells that have been buried on Bird and Marshall's rock up to the less sediment-prone areas of the rock. This is the area up there. that was successful there. Bird and Marshall's Rock have seen better spat sets than much of the rest of the areas there in the Pocomoke Sound. This last year, we moved some still sunk shell that we were finding there to a old Hantong area that's now closed there in Cod Harbor, and we did plant a small amount on Area 13 there, Shell Rock, this last year. Didn't get much spat set there. We did plant another small portion of Area 9 there with some of that shell that was moved that had been sunk. Didn't really see an increase in spat set there. You know, there were some, but it wasn't a whole lot of shell, but we did do that. And this year, it's proposed that we contract with a waterman to that disputed border area there to basically contract with a waterman to dredge sort of those areas of 9 and 10, just that little strip along the border in that 100 to 200-foot section from the border, and move anything that he catches there just further into Virginia. And that would be sort of at a minimum. Basically, if there's any shell there, any live oysters, it'll take it away from that border area and move it further down. And there's an opportunity, if funding allows, and it wouldn't be a huge ask, but there is some restoration-specific funding that's been proposed recently. We're not sure if that'll happen, and we're not sure if we'll have a federal project that could be used as match in. There are some other areas that we could work with, but potentially here in this area, just on a small, thin strip, you see in this area right here, relatively large stone along the border area here. This is area 10 down here, and area 9 up here further, just right along the line would be the idea there. And this would be, you know, relatively large sized granite, and, you know, it wouldn't have to be more than 20 or 30 feet across, and it would go right on the area that had been cleaned of any shells or any oysters that were there, moved back. And this would do, well, two things. It would give you an area there where you did have consistent substrate that wasn't going to go anywhere, wasn't going to dissolve. Could get a good oyster set there that could feed any of the potential shell planting that could be done in the area. And it would also make it much more difficult for wandering dredges to come across that line there. And it would be an area that really couldn't be dredged on, that would sort of be permanent, but it really wouldn't affect the oyster ground that's there because the strip would be so thin. And this would maybe solve part of the problem there, and you'd be able to shell those areas up there at 9 and 10 without having that same concern. And then you'd also be moving that resource there potentially to be worked on in a future season that has been a concern with poaching there, as well as having this sanctuary area there or this stone area that couldn't be worked on. And then that would presumably eventually get a set there at some point, and that could be feeding the rest of the Pocomoke Sound where we've seen a problem there. So it kind of kills a couple birds with a lot of stones, I guess. But that would be the idea for that. And that's sort of a maybe possibility there, depending on funding-wise and where that falls to actually do that project. But at the minimum, I think it would be prudent of us this year to move just that thin border area there, to contract with local watermen just to move just this area here back further away from the Virginia-Maryland line. And that might give you enough oyster density, enough shell density to possibly get some little pockets there going in area 9 and 10. So that would be probably about $20,000 to $30,000 in non-general funds just to do that moving project that we contract with local watermen to do.
How much of that is the big stones?
That $20,000 to
$30,000?
Yeah. That would, the stone portion of that, if you were to do all of it, which is a lot, would probably be, that would be 75,000 tons at roughly $40 a ton. That would be a relatively expensive project for, you know.
Well, just some food for thought. You know, maybe the people up there are a lot more different than what I've run into down here. But I've had them just go 300 or 400 yards inside my ground, go right across islands, and I've got videos of them doing that.
Yeah.
And them little stones ain't going to stop. It might stop a crab from crawling across or something like that. But those guys that want to steal something, if there's something over there to steal, and they're thieves, they'll go get it. They'll just go right around it.
Well,
I just want you to know, I've got videos of that going on.
Well, this would be larger stones there, so there wouldn't be that.
Well, these were islands I'm talking about.
I mean, all he got to do is run over top of them.
It ain't no big deal.
I mean, you know.
You said it was thin enough not to affect the rock, but it's going to be thick enough to keep somebody off of it. That's kind of
a lot of the time that you have up there, as you see, like right here, this is an oyster rock that straddles the line. So you'll have people working right on the border right there is what you get. And this would prevent that from happening. It's not a perfect fix by any means. But that's
the perfect fix, and a whole lot cheaper is to put a boat out there and wash the line.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
You get, for $3 million, you can put a hell of a lot of law enforcement on that line.
Yeah.
Well, you get a nice boat for $3 million.
Yeah. All you need is two, a decent boat, and you got it made. I got a question for Ben. Ben.
Sir.
You were sitting over there, so I thought I'd bother you. Look, the pilings. that the steel pilings that were driven on the Virginia Maroon line.
Yeah.
What do we have to do to get those back? If we had those, the plane would have a much better chance of catching boats in Virginia than a buoy that big or rain 4 foot out of the water.
Yeah. Well, I can check on that for you. I can't
okay.
give you an answer.
Well, GPS
has usually been work on that
yeah.
with Maryland.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
to my knowledge, Maryland takes care of that. That's the
well. That's the problem.
That,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
they pay for the pilings, and whether they're willing to pay money to put some of those back, but I can check with Hank. He can contact his compatriot in Maryland, and we'll see if we can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe we take some of that money. You put steel piling back up where it should be.
I mean, yeah. That, I mean, if we had the money, I guess we could do it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a cheap endeavor.
But, I mean, you know, I guarantee you one thing. If Virginia was going into Maryland stealing their oysters, whose poles would be up?
Well, it's not just the poaching thing. It's, there's relatively few areas up there that are, you know, not harvested on every other year. So this would give you an area where there's going to be live oysters that you don't have to worry about planting the shell back there. It's not going to go away in 3 or 4 years or 5 years. They're not going to be able to poach this area, and they're not going to be able to work their dredge in this area. So this sort of ensures that you have a lot of live oysters, if you get a spat set on them, right there next to Area 9 and 10 that haven't been getting a spat set, right there above Area 13 that hasn't been getting a spat set, that Maryland can't take and that no one can take, and it's not going to be a huge area. It's just going to be right on that border area where people have circled right there. So you're talking 100 to 200 feet within that area that you know, it's not going to go anywhere. They won't be able to steal that part of it anyway if that's going on, and that'll potentially provide some good broodstock for the areas there below it.
And this money was hopefully potentially coming out of a restoration fund, specific fund?
That's correct, yeah.
And this is the best we can come up with, $3 million potentially out of a restoration fund?
It's just $300,000 there.
You said 75. How many yards of rock? How many tons of stone?
7,500.
But you said 75,000.
No, that would be it's relatively the cost would be approximately $300,000. So
I thought you said 75,000.
No.
I think it's cheaper to get a bigger boat.
Well,
too long man out there.
You know, that fixes the enforcement problem, but that doesn't necessarily fix the recruitment problem, not having the broodstock there. And, you know, this is sort of a permanent fix for the other areas there to get some oysters going again. And I can't direct replenishment funds to buy law enforcement boats. We can sort of work with what we have.
I understand that. But if the Marauders are taking a chance coming over getting oysters, they've been doing quite well at it. So there's oysters there. I just wish you all would let us catch them. Let Virginia get the benefits from them, not Maryland.
Well,
I mean, there's enough poaching going on up there in the night. Every Mariner knows there's not a Marine police officer on duty from 10 o'clock at night until 5 o'clock next morning. They had a Coast Guard helicopter come there one night. The guy lived right there on the water. He didn't know what had happened. They turned the lights on. There was about 8 or 10 boats out there on the old rocks. This has been years ago.
What?
I mean, I understand. You know, Maryland's got one good thing going as far as poaching. They set those towers up with radar. Now, Andy Drewer looked into it. It was going to cost him $42,000. But that radar, it would get on that target and fire it wherever it went if it backed into the stall. Maryland's got it. I sat right there and watched the DNR person catch a boat out in Tangier Sound on the other side of Chrisfield, watching it come in on his laptop computer in the truck. Went right there and gave him a ticket. That thing will tell you what's going on at night. It'll tell you what's going on at days. It might be something to look into.
Well,
I know that's not to do with us, but law enforcement's going to have to do something. That's plain and simple.
I think if there was an area there that couldn't be harvested on, be much more inclined to have Area 9 and 10 open up, because you know that there's going to be something there where there are oysters, regardless of whether you can put shell back. I mean, you're more likely to have oysters stay put if you have a place where they can't be harvested on. and then you'd be more likely to not hurt yourself if you did go back there and open up 9 and 10. And that's sort of the reason for doing that, is to sort of buy yourself some reassurance there that if you don't go into 9 and 10, and I'm not saying that there's no oysters there, there's just no shell underneath the oysters. So once you take those oysters, which there's nothing left but mud there, so you're sort of, you're done forever at that point unless you put the shell back, and then there's no guarantee they're going to get a set again. So that's sort of where you are at this point. This is sort of a little bit of insurance, not really so much for the poaching, but having a good place where you can put a area that can catch oysters and is going to stay put, and then you'll be able to have a little bit of reassurance to hopefully get 9 and 10 open and hopefully get some shell planted there in the upcoming seasons. But it's hard to say open up 9 and 10 and just not do anything in there and keep doing that. You know, we sort of got into, there's no, can't say that it was definitely the cause there, but since 9 and 10 have been open, that's when you've seen access come down.
I understand that too.
So this is, it's just buying you a little of insurance policy there to maybe get the whole Pocomoke Sound working again for, you know, a lot of oysters came out of there, more than $300,000 worth last time they were, the Pocomoke Sound was good, and it hadn't been good in 6 years, so.
We're not asking for a lot of time on them. We're just asking for a week on each one.
Well, I think that,
you know, just to start.
That might be a discussion we can have at the, you know, in the, when we're setting the seasons right now. But, you know, I think depending on how this plan goes, sort of it'll give us something to have as a backstop if those areas are going to be opened again.
One more question and I'll shut up. Do you have any influence at all with the Marine Police, law enforcement?
Every time I hear an issue about anything, I let them know.
But, I mean, is there anything done?
I let them know they have caught some poachers coming across there in Virginia.
Two.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a whole lot of people doing it. I mean,
doing what?
Coaching? Coming across. I don't know how many boats are coming across. You might have a better idea, but
father and son coming across there just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
That they can get in there. You can ask Dan. Dan's right there. I ask him.
I see them coming in, Andrew. I mean, they ain't have any oysters in Maryland. They're broke. I mean, kaput. I mean, the ones that's doing it legal can hardly make a day's work out of it. And they're coming through Broad Creek when I'm coming out of Chrisfield, 10:30, 11 o'clock. And as far as them stones, save the money on that. I mean, they don't care for stones. And with the law enforcement. I know you're not law enforcement. I know you're not this is about replenishment. It don't take SEAL 10-6 to get these people. It's going to be blowing 30 or more. They're going to be there, northwest. I mean, any day it blows northwest, that's when you see the most boats coming from out of there. It don't take, you know, don't take the CIA to fix this. I mean, just to figure it out. Wendy, they're going to be there. Your jam days is probably the days you probably might not take as many chances. And you know, as far as I'm going to throw, I guess, a little salt in the wound of this Mudridge issue. You said Jerry took up the shells last year from low sediment areas. Well, that wasn't what we were told last year. We were told that Jerry was taking them up because the barge got off the edge of the rock and they went off in the mud. So, I mean, that's, you know, that was that much money that went towards horrible planting with this company. And, you know, I know we're all not perfect. We all mess up at our job. I do. I mess up more than I go right. But, it, you know, when you're getting paid that kind of money, it's something to look into. So with the money that we pay them and the money that you pay Jerry, you've got a lot of money in moving these shields. And it's just, you know, as far as moving the shields up there, I don't know. I don't know that much about it up there. I've worked, if it weren't for Don and that drive, I wouldn't even know where I was at up there. The two or three times I've been up there, but it's just like putting the same way of thinking as what I was saying up to Potomac. You know, is this money going to be worth it? And if you think it is, okay, I'm all for it. But that's a lot of money. I mean, that could be a lot of shells being planted in Salisbury instead of having all this done. I don't know, just something to think about.
Well, that restoration stuff, that would be going on that. The major portion for this plan would come from money that was sort of marked for non-harvest areas. So it wouldn't really be usable on our harvest areas necessarily. So that's sort of why this would be done there. And you know, I think $4 million, or if it all got wrapped up in use and replenishment areas, you know, I think it's important that we do keep some areas that are closed to harvest going. And, I mean, the Pocomoke and Tangier don't really have the same areas like the Rappahannock does. It has alternative substrate plants right there mixed in with the harvest areas right next to it. So, and you know, that river's been doing well. I mean, we have planted house shells there. We have planted fossil shells there. There are also alternative substrate stone sanctuaries mixed in there. You know, the Pocomoke doesn't have any of that, and it's not doing well. And it's a reason for getting something else going there in addition to that. And it is, there's not a guarantee there. Yep.
I get that argument, you know, because that's when the strike went down. It seems like when Allentown was open and Maryland bought theirs up, that is when the downfall of the Pocomoke started. But I just hope you see where, especially people like Don and all, I mean, you know, the Saxon Islanders, it affects them more than it does us. But it's not closed to everybody. It's only closed to us. I mean, I'm seeing them come in. It's unreal. Again, it don't take SEAL 10-6 to fix this.
Well, I can't address the law enforcement issue like you said there, but my goal is to get 9 and 10 working again so that 9 and 10 can be good productive areas long term, so that the other areas that are good right now don't get that added pressure on there. And this is one sort of step in getting in that direction, I guess, is how phrase it. You know, it doesn't happen overnight, but at least there's an attempt here to get 9 and 10 going again, other than just say, have at it, open it, take it for 2 years, and then be done with it forever. So, you know, that's sort of try to get things going again. I mean, I'm looking at long term here, not 2 weeks, 2 years. It's sort of maybe 5 or 6 years. 9 and 10 are just as good as area 1 and 6 every couple of years there in the Rappahannock, and this is the idea of getting it going there. And I absolutely agree. It's a shame to see those oysters leave, but once they're gone and you don't put anything back, it's that much harder to get it going again, and that's where this is coming from.
Believe it.
Yeah. Yep.
One way or another, yep. I guess that would be the plan there, the Pocomoke Maryland line, to get that going. And then this is another funding dependent issue. There is on page 5 there, the alternative culture projects. We're just going to permit these areas. It's one of those is we know that there's a finite amount of fossil shells. There's not enough house shells to support the fishery that we have. Tommy did bring up a good point, there's always a level of uncertainty with all of this. Some mechanical breakdown could happen. Someone could come in and offer a lot of money to buy a lot of house shells that we didn't have to go around. And it's good to have as many options as possible, and alternative culture projects, as was mentioned, is what they do in a lot of the other states down in Texas, down in Louisiana. It's mostly what they plant here. And we've done a number of experiments over the years. In Piankatank, we've done some plants with larger substrate. There in the Rappahannock, we've sort of narrowed down the size to where you can actually scrape on it. Some of those areas in Butler's Hole were open this last year, and the oysters were a little bit snappy, but you weren't having the same problems that you've been having before with the larger substrate of, crushing them during the harvest process. So what we'd like to do is at least this year get these areas permitted to potentially do stone plants. And these would be areas that these are big areas right now, but we'd sort of chisel out the best spot where it'd be sort of mostly sand, a little bit of mud, and very low, low levels of oysters, but close to better rocks, and sort of plant the edges. And we'd like to permit areas. There's a spot there on the Nansman Ridge in Lower James that would have hard enough ground where you could potentially find a couple acres here or there to do some stone planting on. This is an area that we permit there that's right close to the area there in the lower Rappahannock where we've done stone planting before. that we'd permit for. There's another area close to where we've done stone planting before, and this is a very large area, so we just permit for it and find the best 2 or 3 or 4 acre spot in it. So don't be alarmed by the size of it, but it's always better to have a permit for a larger area and then narrow it down from there, an area 2 there in the Rappahannock. And then these 2 large areas out at the Chesapeake Bay, Deep Rock and Beverly's areas, just permit these areas, potentially have the option of planting stone there if we needed to, and potentially try it on sort of a small scale basis, just so that we keep our you know, deck, have a couple, I wouldn't call them aces up our sleeves, but some other options there if we need to eventually go this route. It would be good to have that knowledge of where it works well, where it doesn't work well. So that area there. And there's another area there, actually, it's showing up on the map here, near Onancock there over on the eastern shore, next to Onancock Rock. There's some area of firm sandy bottom that probably would get a pretty good spat set there if there was some substrate there for it to stick to. So that project would be on the lower range of things, and this is dependent on a lot of what happens. If there's funding that needs to go somewhere else, and that range would be anywhere from 10 to 50 acres at 250 tons an acre and about $40 a ton, and that could range. We wouldn't necessarily do any of this, but that could range from $100,000 to $500,000 there. And just so everyone's clear, that 250 tons is, you know, stone doesn't always weigh the same, but that's about 1,000 bushels equivalent of shell-wise in terms of volume. So that would sort of be a very thin plant. And that's what we've done there in the Butler's Hole area that did pretty well with that alternative. And that's the plan there.
Thank you, Mr. Button. Appreciate all your hard work. I know this was a job preparing all this. Well, gentlemen, Mr. Button has presented his plan. Discussion or motions or whatever you decide. Yes, ma'am.
I'd just like to add or echo this Jim's sentiment, how important I think it is to contact the legislators about these funds. We've talked about a lot of potential plans that are contingent on increased funding. I have some fact sheets about talking points, how this funding could be used by watermen, also some of the restoration dollars, some of the ideas that where those funds could go. But it's definitely not a decision that we have to sit back and wait to be made. The committees at General Assembly hear from conservation groups like I'm in all the time, from Bay Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, but I think hearing from more industry people, more watermen, would really go a long way to encourage the passage of these funds. It's just really critical time. And I'll share some of the contact information with Andrew. I can send an email it to the committee, but really a phone call would be all it would take. And same for the watermen in the audience too. These funds would really go a long way to spreading out these resources and really benefit everybody. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Thank you. Yeah, with these extra funds, you could almost do everything you wanted, couldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that opens up the option of getting more house shell going, getting everything going, and getting, you get that economy of scale going. So you have the opportunity to actually get all the house shell that we can buy planted at a fair price, get the dredge shell planted in the areas that aren't covered, get the alternative substrate, some areas going with that, and those are areas that, you know, once that substrate's there, if it's worked, it comes back up, and you don't have to replant those areas. So it's always good to have more options, and more money does give you more options. So, if things stay the same, as I sort of said in the beginning, it looks similar to what we've done last year. Try to get the dredge shell mobilized, try to get as much house shell as we can for the price that we can, and go from there. But I think there's more options hopefully coming this year that'll hopefully jumpstart and keep going what's been pretty good.
All right.
One last question on figure 3, the Great Wacomica stand and stop. Am I reading this correctly, that the areas that we're pulling seed from and putting a limited amount of shell back are performing better than the coral reefs that had hundreds of thousands of bushels put on them?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Ladies and gentlemen, I guess we're just, somebody want to make a motion or any more discussion or?
What you want to make a motion on his proposal?
His proposal.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we accept Andrew Button's 2018 replenishment plan as he stated.
All right, we have a motion on the floor. Is there a second? We have a second. Discussion? All right. All in favor, then raise your hand or say aye.
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 Opposed?
I'd like to abstain, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm.
All right. Mr. Cullum abstains. All right. We have unanimous except for Mr. Cullum abstention. Thank
and
you.
My abstention is not out of disagreement. It's out of the possibility that we would possibly be a
conflict
supplier to some of this work.
Understood.
Mark,
thank
well
you.
Said.
All right. Mr. Button, do you have anything else?
I think Ben had something to say. Ben Stay.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Stay.
I just have a housekeeping thing for you and then an offer and you can accept it or not. I know y'all want to go home, so mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Linda Hancock, I don't know if he reminded you before I came in, but if you got an economic interest form, because you're on this committee, please fill it out.
Ethics.
Fill it in.
The ethics one you're talking about, Ben?
The economic interest thing.
Okay, yeah, I don't know why I got that thing.
Well, a few people, I don't know who you are, but Linda just said there's a few of you that haven't done it.
Yeah,
right. It's important that get done. I have to fill one out, too.
Okay.
I have my own surveying company and some other land interests, so I have to fill one out too. If you want a quick update on the legislation for the General Assembly, I can give it to you. If you don't, it's not much. That's up to y'all.
So the Virginia Beach issue is basically put to bed now?
Yes. So there's a couple bills in Virginia Beach. There was a bill that was sort of sponsored by the agency, and then there was a competing bill to fix an anomaly in the code about whether municipalities can hold oyster ground by transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, they can apply for ground, like the City of Virginia Beach or a county, but the transfer section of the code, sort of strikingly, does not contain that same language as the application section. So in Virginia, if you're a resident or a corporation that's 60% Virginia-owned, or a municipality, you can apply for oyster ground. The transfer section says those same things, except there's no mention of municipalities. So there was an attempt to fix that. We actually have transferred some ground to municipalities in the past, thinking that we didn't realize it was that anomaly in the code. So this has created a conundrum. There was two bills introduced to fix that. They're both dead. Okay. So we don't know how this is going to eventually get resolved, but the ones that have been transferred will stand until someone tells us we did something wrong. But this probably needs to be fixed. The other bill that you might have interest in is the riparian frontage that you have to own to get a riparian oyster ground lease in Virginia. It's currently 205 feet. There is a bill that's out of committee in the House and is going to the House floor that will create 105 feet as the minimum. And those people will be able to get a quarter acre riparian up to 205 feet if this passes. The people who always could get a riparian for over 205 will still be able to get up to a half acre. So this will just increase the number of people who are eligible to get a small riparian lease from 205 down to 105 frontage. So if you're an aquaculturist who likes shallow water habitat for cages, this might have some impact on you, but I think the impact's pretty minimal. And there's some other little bit of language in that about the specific to the Lynn Haven that's probably not germane. It's related to riparians and it's not really important. The only other bill that you might have interest in is Delegate Helsel has a bill in about a dredge on going through a sanctuary on a boat. That bill is, as of yesterday, and I looked on my phone just recently, it's kind of in limbo at the moment. We don't know what Helsel's going to do with it. It would be referred to the Agriculture Committee. I mean, has been referred, but it's never showed up on an agenda. There's some rumor that it'll be withdrawn, but that's all I know. And we'll see what happens with that one.
When a municipality owns ground, are they under the same obligation that every one of us that own leases that they have to propagate oysters?
Yes, and that's the conundrum is City of Virginia Beach has gotten some leases by transfer. The City of Pocosin has a lease. The City of Suffolk has a lease. The City of Suffolk got theirs really for a dredge project. So they probably will not be able to meet their obligation. City of Pocosin got one. I'm not really sure why. I think it's related to their boat ramp, but it's not really at the ramp. It's out in the river. Virginia Beach, we believe, got them in relationship to restoration efforts they're trying to do with Army Corps money, which would include shellfish reefs, maybe SAV planning, maybe, as they call it, reintroduction of scallops into the Lynn Haven, although there's no evidence there was ever actually scallops in the Lynn Haven, but it might work. I don't know. So that's another conundrum, and this is why industry generally has got concerns about municipalities having leases, because what's the purpose of having them? They're not going to do a moisture loan. So, but right now, they would have to meet that 10-year requirement of attempting to do some kind of shellfish growing. So this issue is not settled. I expect to see future legislation to try to address it. But the issue is kind of dead this year because all the bills.
Lots of 10 years.
That's within the code. Every 10 years you renew your lease.
Yeah, no, I understand it, but why? Because the code requires activity on that ground. Why do the people have? Why do they don't have to do it the first year? They can wait till the nine and a half years before they do anything.
Because that's what the General Assembly has said. That's the way they set it up.
And do you think that's apropos?
Well, if you remember, we had a shellfish task force 3 years ago of industry people. And we beat that to death. We suggested perhaps 5 years was more reasonable total.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, maybe we needed some targets, the things you said you'd do and you have to meet them, even during that 5 or 10 year period. That's open to debate. You know, I don't know that we'll ever come to a consensus on what's the best approach. A use plan, some requirement that every 2 or 3 years you show you've actually been doing something during the 10 years. Those are all options, but it's all controlled by the General Assembly. We have a limited amount that we can do here at the agency when we're constrained by the code. So I'm not promoting anything, really, at the moment. I'm just telling you that's the way it is.
Anybody else?
That's all I got. So.
Thank you, Mr. Day. Mm-hmm. Right, does anybody else have any new business or anything they'd like to bring up? Yes.
About the shells, did you break the house shell that's better than the fossil shell? Are you saying that it's not enough house shell a year to cover what the plant, you know, the plant that you got to buy the fossil shell to cover the total amount of shell that you need each year?
Part of that is right, that we don't have enough, there's not enough house shells to borrow to cover everything that we need. And it might be cost prohibitive to sort of stockpile that much shell. I mean, you're talking 500,000 bushels at least. So, I mean,
yeah.
But
I was just saying, I was wondering if you could, you know, if you stockpile that shell and then buy all the host shell you can, and then use the fossil.
It would be kind of logistically challenging, I guess, with the barges. You'd have to unload it and probably.
With the host shell produces, but
With the minimum budget that we could have, if we have to get fossil shell, that will almost take half of the budget.
Right.
Because they won't operate unless it's like $4 million. Is that correct?
Yeah. Close to half their cost there is mobilization, and then you're getting even less bushels for your dollar amount. So you go from $3 to $4 a bushel to, you know, $7 to $8 a bushel, because it's so much to get it mobilized to go. So that just
basically, the budget is public knowledge, and they tell you they know what your budget is, and they say, well, we're not going to come for that one. That's how it works.
Yeah, this.
No, we got to use them. We ain't got no house here.
All right, do we need to set a date for another committee meeting, or is that something you'll just maybe email us when the time comes?
Yeah, there's a pressing issue there, I think. You know, I'd like to get maybe another sometime. If we want to come up with another plan there, but I don't think we have to set one at this point. We get two going before this evening.
It would be nice, maybe, you know, with I'm not sure who you talk to in finances since Jane's gone, but maybe if you could update the committee as this funding moves forward. So
I think maybe a March or an April meeting, then we should have sort of a better idea, and that'll be before we really roll out with the plan there, where we stand. So that might be and I'll try to go ahead and get commission approval on the ask list, and then we can do another update there. So probably sometime in the late spring or early summer, before we start planning, get an update going.
So to Jackie's point, everyone in this room, it's a pain in the butt, but take your phone and call these numbers, and they'll answer the phone. And all you got to do is say you're a Virginia Working Waterman, and I promise you they're going to write down what you say. It's important. We hear that in Richmond over and over again, that they just don't hear enough from. And while we always don't feel about it, the comments that we hear in Richmond, and Ben, you've been there, you can attest, the others, they care about watermen in Richmond.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Cowan. All right.
That's for adjournment.
We have a move for adjournment.
Second.
All in favor?
Everybody, second.